safely. You dug through the ditches and you burned through the witches, and the reward will be received. Don't get too excited, though. It's just us. It's just us. Don't worry.
Hi.
It's just your pals here at the Soxcast, here to bring you resolution to yesterday's exciting cliffhanger. Welcome back to the Soxcast Game of the Year Spectacular, day number twat, where we will be chug-a-lugging our way through our personal Game of the Year lists with entries 5 through 1, and you better believe we got another incredible haul of listener lists to help us get through this long, arduous journey. To my immediate virtual right, reports that he can only get it up once a day are false. It's Red.
Listen, okay, I'm not going to get another chance to talk about novel AI, my actual game of the year. But let me tell you. It's a good piece of software. But I didn't think I could get away with that twice.
Oh, we have fun here at the Soxcast for all you first timers. Rhett, you're rare. You are definitely raring.
I'm raring to go. I'm also raring to finish and get back to.
Get rare to finish. Get back to another 8 hours in novel AI, because that VTuber porn ain't gonna generate itself.
I just discovered that you can type in Gacha Girl games names too.
Oh, well, damn!
I'm just like, wow, I can just generate JPEGs for free. Oh, you spent $100 rolling for her?
Look at this shit!
I typed in Silver Wolf Come, and oh boy.
Oh, you think AI is intellectual property theft? But you didn't consider that stealing from gacha devs is always right.
It's always morally correct. To my immediate virtual left, he has never been more excited to find out that fist can also be a verb. John Thayer.
Jesus Christ.
That one would have actually been appropriate for me because it's a Symphogear reference.
It's actually a reference to fisting, Rhett, where yeah, you put four or five fingers in somebody at once, sexually.
Yeah, it's a verb. Yeah. I've never tried it, never going to. Not my deal. Not my bag. It's a little extreme. What? That's a little extreme for my taste.
It doesn't. No, you don't literally stick a whole fist.
No,
I like poke your. You poke like.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
no, you just get. Mm-hmm. You just get them warmed up. It's fine.
Yeah. Okay. Still seems a little intense.
It's not. What? It's not that intense. Maybe it's if it's different for different people, but
could
it doesn't.
Be. Yeah. Like, you know, there are situations that maybe need to be considered.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, now that we've successfully scared everybody off,
I think the novel AI jokes is going to be the most controversial sex cast thing ever.
Yeah, it's probably gonna. Rhett's done it.
Not the porn part, the AI part.
Yeah, the AI exactly. part. Like, we specifically do not give a shit that it's porn. Like, fine. Look. Get all your Silver Wolf plus cum prompts that you want, but just make sure that they're not AI generated. Is where we're going to land on this, I imagine, as a community. But. Hey, never let it be said that the Soxcast does not tackle the important issues.
It's fine, Red. I still love you, even though you're problematic now. Even though you canceled now.
He's our problematic phase.
Not for the porn. That's fine.
The porn's fine. You can have all the porn you want.
This is good.
God. Ah, remember when we did podcasts? This is why we did them.
Yeah.
Oh boy. But yeah, we are back. Day two. Same rules apply. And I guess there's rules, Rhett. There's rules. Did you use AI to generate your list? I don't want to know what an AI would come up with for an SMPS Game of the Year list.
This is the first time in my life I've actually tried. Oh God, I don't know how this works.
whatever. I'm not touching this.
It's fine, John. It's fine. We're not going to crucify right. Red or anything. It's fine.
I know. All right. I was trying to see what one of those would actually generate for Socks Make People Sexy Game of the Year Top 10.
I don't think that I'm well enough known for us to be a prompt in an AI that it would know what we're doing. So, anyway, video games and the best ones that we played. Let's get things started. I'll kick things off for us. I'll pull this train back on the track somehow. And we'll manage to save the show for like the three people that haven't already ejected this MP3 into mm-hmm. the recycle bin. I'm going to start with a number five, if you can believe that. I know it's kind of shocking. You know, I'm putting the cart after the horse here and putting the five after the six, but sometimes you just got to think a little outside the box, and that's why you come to me. Anyway. My number five, like, look, dude, like, what can I say? Like, number five is Trails to Azure. It's fucking Trails, dude. It's one of the best. It's one of the best Trails entries, hands down. Like, I got to play it this year with a proper translation. It's like I shotgunned Zero and Azure, like. 2 months before Cold Steel 3 came out, and I did it with a bad translation. And that story still fucking hit. But now it's got a proper translation, it's got some quality of life improvements made to it, and it was just an absolutely just squeaky clean, easy to play experience. I think this is also kind of the point where Falcom storytelling starts showing its cracks.
Uh-huh.
With a lack of stakes.
I'm still like, this is my favorite game ever, so.
But by itself.
I'm twisting the discourse.
But by itself, Trails to Azure is still an amazing conclusion to the Crossbell series. Like, this game is still great. Like, those RPG systems still felt fun to kind of jump back into. And it much, much more so than I would say for the other Trails game that I played this year. Shocking, that's not on my list.
Knives Out.
They're out, baby. They're out. But yeah, for me, this was just like going right back to that world of Crossbell that I just really like a whole lot. With these characters that you just want to grab them all and just pull them in for the biggest group hug imaginable. you just love them to bits. It might be where Falcom storytelling starts falling apart a little bit, but I still think that, like, this game, like, when you take everything, like, the way that it hits the ground running, the way that, like, the absolutely buck wild conclusion when you get to it, it's just like, it still hits, man! It's still really good! Like, the first...
I think of the first five Trails games, it is, like, the most... high energy. It's like the most compulsively playable.
Yeah, like it is propulsive. This game does not really have a point.
Doesn't let up.
Yeah, like it's not a point where I felt like it slowed down all that often.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Really, really great game. Love me some Trails to Azure. Like Falcom got more representation on an end of the year list. Imagine that.
Shocking. There's been some ease mentions, but yeah, kind of a quiet year for them so far.
Yeah, a little bit of a quieter year, but still, you know, they're still in there. But yeah, that is my number five, The Legend of Heroes, Trails to Azure, because, hey, I got to play it in a real good version this year, and yeah.
It's so classy.
Yeah, it is a classy as hell game. Love it to pieces. Up next, number five, I'm going to throw it over to our good pal, John.
That's me.
That is you, actually.
What's going on this time? I've become a little green Sylvie Lime. What's got you moving so fine, dancing to the rhythm of a Sylvie Lime? My number five is Sylvie Lime. The romantic digital world of Sylvie Lime.
This game is a trip.
I love this game so fucking
much. It's one of those games where you sit down and your first 5 minutes are going to be, what?
Uh-huh.
Is this?
How far did you get into? Did you finish this one?
Or? I did not finish this one, no.
Hopefully you'll have a similar arc as me. I played it for like 2 hours last year.
Yeah.
And I got to a point where I was like,
oh, I got to a boss I couldn't beat. It was like, oh God, this is terrifying. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, this is too much. Cause it's a first person. It's not first person. It's a 2D platformer. You could even call it a Metroidvania.
It's very Metroid. Yeah, it's Metroidvania-ish. Yeah.
Where almost every key on the keyboard is a different verb you get from different power-ups.
Yep.
And the main mechanic is that you can transform from a Sylvie into a green lime. And when you turn into the lime, all of your momentum you had from being Sylvie, who can just jump, run and jump around kind of normally, is preserved. So you jump straight up and turn into a lime. Now you're flying directly in the direction you were jumping. Yeah. You jump at an angle, you can get kind of an angled shot. And so there's spikes everywhere. There's navigation puzzles all built around turning into a lime.
Yeah.
So when I first played it, I was overly intimidated. I thought it was going to be like a giant La Mulana thing, where you have to like unpack this huge puzzle over the course of, you know, hours and hours and hours. It's not actually that scary. I think I wound up clearing it about 5 hours when I revisited it. The boss that I got stuck on wasn't actually that mean. I just had to experiment a bit and find a way through. And the story that unfurls itself as you explore the world of Sylvie Lime. It's like a meta story about, this is sort of a spoiler, but it's been a year. I feel like it's such a good hook. It's a meta story about the developers of the game, making the game together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the way that plays out is so creative and cute and sweet and nice. And it complements the really lovely rules of exploring the world in a just a beautiful way. I just had a great time with this one. I think Sylvie's pretty much a genius. She's been making stuff online for like over a decade. I played one of her Glorious Trainwrecks games like 10 years ago, Cactus Flock. And a lot of her stuff is like about exploring, like, giving you a really weird movement option and then exploring that in a very unique way. Like we were talking, I think we were DMing earlier about like a streamer getting to the wall jump option in Super Metroid and just learning that, like how there's this extremely esoteric, hard to pull off movement tech that just breaks the game wide open once you get it. If I want to that feels like a way of communicating something with a lot of her games, is like exploring these weird edges at the fringe of what you can do with game rules. And then Sylvie Lime, that's complemented by the broader story by Aria, who wrote multiple VNs I really, really like, including Love and Dehumanization this year, which I really loved. So it just comes together in a cool way. A lot of Sylvie's games are dense, hard and scary to the point that I can't quite penetrate them. This hit like a really nice balance of like maintaining what is special about her work while being in a more digestible package.
Yeah.
I was just over the moon for this one. And I had a really nice time. So. Nice. Rhett.
Hey.
Number five.
I can't believe that this is the first time this game is coming up. And based on that fact, this may be the only time it comes up.
Oh, damn.
My number five is The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
Holy shit! Wow, yeah! I'm like, I somehow completely forgot that game even released. Holy shit, is that like the first major AAA game to make the fucking list on all these?
Final Fantasy 16 got a Final Fantasy 16. Armored Core 6.
Alright.
I mean, I don't think anybody here like really plays Western games, it seems. That are the big AAA ones.
Sure.
So Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom. Mm-hmm. So originally this was going to be lower on my list. I was going to put it next to Xenoblade and go, well, this one's not higher on the list because it's a DLC expansion to the bigger game.
Right, yeah.
Because I have some issues with this game. It's one of those like ones where I have a couple knives for it. Mm-hmm. The whole reusing the map from the first game, like people are pretty divided on it. Mm-hmm. I was not a fan, even though narratively it obviously makes sense.
Yeah.
Like this game is the Saints Row 4 to the other one being God. Saints Row 3.
Oh, that's rough.
But I like Saints Row 4.
It's okay.
It just means in terms of they reused the map and like they let you fly now. Like, they reused the map because it also breaks it and trivializes
it. Right, right.
Like, and it's weird because there's things in this game with the crafting where they try to restrict flight. Like, there's only two items that have, like, really short timers. Mm-hmm. Like, the balloons and the gliders will disappear after, like, a minute.
Yeah.
But then somehow somebody figured out, oh, you just attach a fan and a fucking steering handle and you can just fly forever.
That's crazy.
And it just kind of breaks the game. And I'm like, did Nintendo know about this? So I considered putting this game lower on my list. And eventually it climbed its way back up to number 5. Because I had to admit I had a very good time with it. Mm-hmm. Even though I prefer the previous game, which was a Game of the Year winner.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Pretty high expectations there. It's still a really solid adventure. It is a continuation of the story from the first game. Like, narratively, because it's, like, it's getting to see the world that you saved in the previous game, and I thought that was neat.
Yeah.
Like, because the first game had, like, almost no NPCs. Like, it was just, like, Legend of Zelda 1 Desolation, and in this game they're rebuilding, like, the towns and stuff, and it's like, oh, there's, you know, people are returning, and it's, like, it's cool seeing that development.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, my thoughts are all kind of scattered shot. I think the story had a lot of potential at points. It didn't really land for me at the end. Because there's some very cool stuff with the flashbacks. I thought the stuff with Zelda gets teleported to the past is really interesting. And how her story goes is really neat. Mm-hmm. And then maybe the stuff in the present with Link, the silent protagonist, isn't necessarily as compelling.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there's just weird things like, you have the four, like, dungeons that you do that all play the same cutscene at the end to explain to you.
Right.
Like, because you can do them in any order. Yeah. They just made the same cutscene four times, but then you still see it four times.
But you see it four times, yeah.
It's just very weird. Like, you didn't think to change this up, like, at all. Like, and there's also the big thing in this one is the crafting system, but then they do weird things like, To get the resource you need to craft stuff, you have to go to the underground. And the underground is interesting at first because it's this big, whole new mysterious area. And I thought by the end, I was like, oh, you really could have done more with that.
Yeah.
Like, just realizing that, like, how they constructed that map and how little there actually is under there.
Oof.
And the fact that maybe farming shouldn't be in a Zelda game. They don't let you do the fun part all the time.
Mm.
But towards the end, I did start going a little more wild with it. I figured out, like, what's the strongest vehicle I am capable of making? Like, I'm just going to burn all my resources a few times to do this and have some fun.
Yeah.
So I made this thing that was like a wall, and I think it had like spikes and flamethrowers on the top just to keep... and it gets crazier. And then there's on the sides are two huge pillars that go up like 50 feet. And then on the top of those are like 8 laser cannons. And because they're really high up, what that does is it gives them a really good field of vision. So they just instantly lock onto any enemy nearby and just fucking eviscerate it immediately. And like, it wasn't perfect. Like the three-headed dragon thing, the Ghidoras, I think, like were able to take it out. But there's a fight towards the end of the game in the climax where the game just summons like 100 enemies or something.
Oh,
like this huge brawl.
Bring it out.
And I summoned my fucking tank as a counter and just
watched it go crazy.
Just watched everything die really quickly.
That's really good.
It was really funny.
That's so choice.
And like the first game was really easy by default, and then they had the master mode. This game feels actually very close to master mode, and you get one shot killed a lot.
Oh, wow.
Like, stuff hits like a fucking truck in a way I was surprised that it's the default difficulty.
Yeah.
Because, like, you have these systems that if you exploit, you can just not really have to actually engage with the sword combat where you're just like, hey, there's a flamethrower on my shield now. Like, oh, if I go near you, like doing like electrocution stuff to just permanently stunlock enemies is funny.
Yeah.
Like, there's just a lot of creativity and interesting stuff into this game.
It feels into the imaginative, like the actual imagination of, you know, like something that they've always talked about with Zelda is like, oh, we want to spark your imagination. Well, it's just like, well, it feels like this is like the most directly you've ever done that.
Yeah. So, like, there's stuff that I think is better than the first game. I think I actually did more shrines in this game than the original.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, the combat shrines from the first game are much better.
Because
the ones in the first game were, like, the same enemy one every time. And in this one, they do a bunch of dungeons where you start with, like, not three hearts, but, like, you start with no equipment and you have to craft new weapons take on the enemies.
Yeah,
so it's like, oh, there's a flamethrower over there, let's grab that. And then, you know, grabbing stuff from the enemies themselves is fun.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a lot of really cool stuff, and then there's stuff that they just repeat ad nauseum, the open world stuff.
Ooh.
Like, there's this one dude holding a sign, so you've got to help him prop up the sign. And also, he appears like 80 times in the world or something ridiculous.
Jeez.
So it definitely suffers from open worldness of like, oh, there's content everywhere, repeated content. Let's do this. Like, I think it kind of loses the magic of the first game, but it is still a very fun game.
Yeah.
And I think Nintendo said I played like 270 hours or something insane.
Yeah, you seem to have an insane amount of time on that, yeah.
Like, really, like... Maybe it was 170. I don't know. It was a lot, though. The rebound from this game was rough when I was like, Jesus. Like, the month later, I was like, man, I sure played a lot of Zelda, huh? Like, an unreasonably large amount of Zelda. So, yeah, that's my number five.
That's a solid number five, yeah. All right. Well, I suppose... that means we're going to jump right back in to our listener lists. And I do believe I have one for you. I got one here from our good pal, Beepner. How's it going, Beepy? Right. Beepner lists number 3, Honkai Star Rail, which I think is also up to 3 now. A substantial single-player RPG with an engaging combat system that unfortunately got shoehorned into a live service game format. Had this been a retail game that scaled down the cast of PCs and had the main story available all at once, I might have stuck with it. Eventually, I had to stop because I wanted to move to... number 2, The Legend of Heroes, Trails from Zero. A new cast in a new setting, more than loosely tied to the Sky games, while running on the same engine with a few combat tweaks. While the cast doesn't quite have the same memorability factor of Sky, Lloyd and his squad feel like a family, and more time is devoted to their interactions as they banter and solve cases. Only Azure, 400 hours of Cold Steel, and God knows whatever else Falcom releases next left to go.
Yeah, easy. Just easy. Like 8 more games.
Well, you can skip Sky, like Trail, like you can skip Sky. Who plays those? It's funny because
skip Sky.
Falcom's actually Falcom's like said themselves, no, everybody, you need to start with these games. Like even recently, they're like, look, we know we've not remade them yet, but you seriously need to start with these games.
Interesting.
They're apparently looking at options to remake the Sky games. So.
I would love if they just did some sort of port.
Yeah, just do a port that's like the Zero Azure games. Maybe go ahead and put all 3 of them in the same bundle.
Yeah.
Because they're so important to where you need to start with this series. But yeah, anyway. And number 1, another one we've heard a bit from, Live Alive, or Live Alive, or Live Alive, or Live Alive.
I always thought it was Live Alive.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Live Alive. Imagine you're playing a series of short RPG maker games set in different time periods across wildly different genres. Then you assemble your endgame party from the protagonists of their respective games, and the real RPG begins. That's what the Live Alive remake experience is, which was considered groundbreaking and experimental on the Super Famicom. I can't speak to the original version, but the remake has some quality of life improvements and voice cutscenes, though I feel the difficulty is nerfed overall, barring the prehistoric chapter and the endgame grind. One thing they did nail is the feeling of chills that you get when megalomania kicks in during the cutscene just before a chapter boss.
That is one of the choicest bits of that, is because it's just like, oh shit, we're at the finale.
We are at
this finale. One little bit of connective tissue between every chapter.
Yeah, it's really, really good. So yeah, that is Beepner's list. John!
That's me.
Give me another listener list.
I can do that. Oh, who's this? Who Zellos Mark II.
No, never heard of him.
New listener.
Must be.
Here's your list. Love and Dehumanization, PC. Of the air game I've played this year, I haven't played a lot this year, sadly. This is the only one I'd wholeheartedly recommend to others, provided they heed the content warnings. The entire game is a warm, heartfelt exploration of the line between submission and self-abuse, much like Arya's earlier VN, Dead Girl's Notebook, but a lot more explicit. Despite the cute, goofy, high fantasy trappings, which I enjoyed quite a bit, the game just felt like an essay as it does a fantasy story. I really like this one. I think the writing was really strong. Mm-hmm. Wizardry, Proving Grounds of the Mad Overlord for Super Nintendo. Just an unrelenting, grueling, and at times blithely unfair project of a game from beginning to end, which might make it sound like a bad game, but slowly working my way through the game's death trap ridden labyrinths and finding little ways to cheese the system in my favor felt immensely gratifying. The way in which the game demands your full attention at all times was a bit meditative, to be honest. The game helped me preserve my sanity through an especially painful moment of loss IRL. Mm. I played this one with her. It's really hard, y'all.
Yeah, like Wizardry games do not F around.
I didn't know. You don't know. You think it's going to be like Mega 10, but Mega 10 is like
Mega
baby,
10 is fucking child's
baby
play.
Baby shit in comparison.
It is baby mode compared to what Wizardry does.
Oh, God. It's a lot. But yeah, playing just crawling our way through it and mapping out everything on graph paper.
It's called a dungeon crawler for a reason.
Because you have to claw your way.
You literally have to claw your way for progress.
You're on your chest clawing your way through every tile. Every tile is a hard-fought victory. All right, last one. Queen Beast. Mm. I cannot stress how much this game's sense of humor and setting and vibe is my shit. An incredibly snappy story that just goes. A cast I ended up loving with my entire heart. A cute and unfortunate glasses girl. It's got it all. This game is aspirational, even among a year where I'd played a bunch of aspirational games. I want to make VNs and RPGs like this game. Maybe not anything as pretty as this game. It is
God
very pretty.
God damn.
But something of this tone and scope for sure. I fucking love
this
Queen
game's
Beast.
90s OVA energy is off the charts.
Oh my God.
Love that game.
All right. What's next?
I do believe Rhett, have a listener list.
This one comes in from Adamine634.
Hi, Frank.
Okay, so this is another game getting a second mention. Number 3, Victim Doll.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah!
I'm honored to be welcomed into the pantheon of people who put porn on their end of list
Welcome!
For this podcast. Besides helping me get comfortable with my freak shit, it's an excellent science fiction story in its own right. One that uses transcoding in its existentialism and explores what it means for us to be dominated by economic power structures that demand something of us for our bare necessities. It's uncomfortable, cathartic, and indulgent. It's the story of a working girl struggling to make ends meet, who walks down the street covered in mayonnaise, cum, and shame, and things... and thinks, man, that ruled.
Yeah, Victim Doll is really good.
Number two, Pentinent. It's a special thing to watch a creative you've admired for years get the chance to make their niche pet project after 20 years of build up goodwill in the industry. Because Josh Scheuer used his chance as a gigantic history nerd to create something that pushes the envelope for complex, sophisticated, and politically aware storytelling for this medium. Pentiment is a narrative adventure game from the director of New Vegas and Pillars of Eternity that uses the design traditions Obsidian has mastered in their RPGs to tell an intimate story with detailed characters about 1950s early modern Germany that uses its roots as a role-playing game to give the players personalized experiences that allow us to reflect on our relationship to history, our place in it, and what we leave behind. Pentiment rejects the idea of linear progression, dissects Christianity and its conflicts with its history, and My L's are dying today.
Yeah, they are.
And delivers a powerful message about artists and their relationship to their art and careers.
Awesome. Pentiment looks so good.
Light Yagami done got a hold of Rhett.
My God. Number one. First mentioned, but it's come up in past years. Higurashi When They Cry.
Yeah, baby!
Topping it off with a certified member of Sox Classics.
Yep.
There were many reasons I was eager to read Higurashi, like familiarizing myself with the writer of the most promising of the Silent Hill games, Konami threw out the dartboard.
Mm-hmm.
To see which stick. But a chief among them was that it was a psychological story from Japan written by someone who actually has knowledge of psychology and mental health issues. I don't know if anyone really knows how much Ryukishi's time as a civil servant contributed to what he wrote and what was his experience or his personal research into the matter, but the message and worldview he espouses is noteworthily left-wing in how he sees the intersectionality of history, environment, and economics in mental health, and how crime and mental health crises should be handled. That speaks to my perspective as a psych student. Higurashi's mannerisms and long-windedness weren't always to my taste, and large chunks of the early chapters were like pulling teeth to get through, but the palpable paranoia and tragically lovable characters won me over to the point I shed tears during the final moments of Matsuribashi. Oof. When I thought I wouldn't. The main series would have been enough to land on my list, but Saikaroshi tipped this over to number one and blew away my expectations one final time to deliver the most mature and life-affirming message I could have gotten at this point in my life.
Yeah. Saikaroshi is a, like, I think that is absolutely a part of the series. I don't think that that's just, that does not count to me as just a fan disc. Like, no, Saikaroshi is very important to kind of re-emphasize. It's the last nail in the coffin of, like, what this story is saying and what it means, and it's a very important story.
Beautiful.
All right.
I think you usually give me the Frank lists.
Yeah, usually.
Well, I know.
Welcome to the big show.
Yeah. Having fun with it?
I was like,
you love it, don't you? Feels good, doesn't it? All right. Is that the end of Adamine's list?
Yes.
All right. Yep. So moving on, we have another audio list. This one coming in from, well, the day that we are recording this, Sunday. Let's have a listen in 3, 2, 1, play.
Hi. Hey. Sunday here. It's 7 a.m. on the dot, and I'm here with another Game of the Year list. Salutes. Played over 60 games? Truly the year I've been honing my taste for. First on the list at number 3, Tomodachi Life. This was the year that I finally hacked my 3DS, and I kind of came around on the idea of just games as toys. I made all my friends, picked up my friend after top surgery, right? We wanted some yakimo, so we went to Tokyo Central. Afterwards, we were eating in the car, and I'm like, do you want to meet your Tomodachi? I take out my 3DS, and I show him as me, and he's like, kind of like stunned. He's like, this is like if you made a homunculus of me, and just took it out. This game was just so good for hours spent sitting around with friends, chatting. And as my friends grew, the relationships in the games wouldn't necessarily grow in the same way, so I would hack them together using a save editor. Getting really honed in on loving the sandboxy elements of games and just modifying them to my heart's content. I guess I'm just not really interested in playing by the rules so much. After that is going to be Coquette Dragoon at number 2. This was a game that I think that I connected with most because of a standout character. Belle was almost painfully relatable sometimes. The more I wrote about how I felt about her, the more I realized that there was just layers upon layers to uncover. I'm also just increasingly interested in the sense of subculture and place. Place, especially context, is just becoming so much more important to me. I want to feel like I'm in history. Coquette Dragoon is really on its way to establishing that, so I'm very excited. Volume 1, in my mind, is already a success. Honorable mention Tulip, number 1 goes to Song of Saya. Oh. What to say about Song of Saya? A story that I connected with and helped me uncover, in a very safe manner, a lot of experiences that I had throughout my life. Just examine my feelings around them through fiction. And I've just really been enjoying doing that this year. Out of all the games, this was the one that just did it the most. And the endings, oh my god, the endings, I feel like, especially the, what I would consider the true ending, I don't know if it actually is, a very potent message that I've been running with ever since. Embrace the power of your misbeliefs. Embrace the power of misunderstanding. That's what I've been more and more interested in lately. Not understanding, but the power of misunderstanding. Yeah, thank you, Soxcast, for doing this service every year. Here's to another year. 2024, year of the Vita.
Vita means life.
We love you, Sunday. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Saya no Uta.
Saya sweep. Saya sweep. Saya
damn!
Sweep.
We're starting to see some trends now.
It's like when you streamed Somnium Files.
Right.
And then people put it on there.
Yeah, so, the, and like I streamed Higurashi. What happened?
Right.
Yeah.
I
let's play.
Thank you for using
Uta.
Your powers for good.
Look at me.
I am inarguably for good.
The one streamer that has a
influencer.
Platform. The one influencer, the Paola influencer, if you will. The Paola influencer being the one to actually put the word influence in influencer.
Yep. All right, next year, Kikoku guys, sweep.
There we go! Next year, we're going to maybe try, I don't know, Euphoria, Maggot Baits. There we go. That's how I'll get them. I'll get you. Don't worry. I got y'all covered. And if it's Euphoria we're talking about, I got you covered in lots of varying bodily fluids. Anyway, John, are we ready to kick it up to number 4?
So I told you about my mission to clear out my entire itch wish list,
the
right?
The whole mission, the biggest mission. No mission has ever been more important.
is this the game that I've been on there the longest and most stubbornly. I kept eyeballing it like, do I want to play? Of course I want to play this, but God, it looks so long.
Mm-hmm.
This is my number 4 is Embrick of Wolfhammer's Castle. This is by Large Battleship Games. It is a... Oh, man. What is Embrick of Wolfhammer's Castle? It is a... Sometimes... All right, I just pulled the site. Sometimes mildly explicit Yuri adventure set in a D&D-like high fantasy world. Mm-hmm. This is an RPG Maker 2000 game with mostly pre-built assets. With mostly built-in RPG Maker assets. There's very little fighting. It is mostly just you being the princess of, you being the princess who or the duchess. You arrive at this castle where you are engaged to be married to the prince, but the prince is nowhere to be seen. So you just are kind of left to your own devices and you wander around. And then it's just a huge sandbox where you just go talk to fucking everybody, and everybody has like a 2-hour quest line.
Oh Lord.
With like extremely loved on comedy scenes. It's extremely funny. You can interact with everything in this game. Everything has like flavor text.
Oh nice. That's always fun.
Yeah, it's just like you can just exist in this world just pecking at everything in it for like 12 hours or something. And it's just extremely funny the whole time. There's a lot of D&D like energy, and there's a lot of tabletop energy in this. I think it's explicitly references to tabletop. And
I've been playing a lot more Western RPGs, and I think that primed me to just absolutely fall in love with something that is purely a sandbox of delightful characters and interactions. Mm. And by the time I got to the end game, which I had to follow a really obtuse guide for.
Oh, Lord.
I got to it's really cute. It's got a cute, like meta, moving meta finale. Mm-hmm. Like this isn't one you play cause you want to get to the true end and cry at the end, like for a big tightly scoped story. I think in Quantum Entanglement, the other game I played by this dev, which I also really liked, it's more linear and story focused. And that makes kind of some of the weaknesses in the kind of the plotting, the story, right, the story craft there a little bit more deeply felt. But if you just want to like live in an extremely funny, loved on, gorgeous world for hours and hours and hours, just pecking at it, falling in love with all of these characters and cackling, this game's just a blast. There's like a 2 or 3 month period where I felt like this was going to be my game of the year.
Oh, wow.
Cause it's just, like delightful, I guess is the word I keep coming back to. It's pure joy.
Awesome.
So, Embrick of Wolfhammer's Castle. That's my number four. Rhett, what's your number four?
So I guess this is the closest thing I have to what Polly said of a Hell Has Frozen Over game.
Mm-hmm.
I think both of you watched my journey with this one. It's Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Yeah, this is not.
Holy shit!
I didn't know that this would land on your list. I couldn't gauge your thoughts on it.
I played so much of it. If I hated it, I would not have. So basically, as we know, this game is called Fire Emblem Three Houses, mm-hmm. which means there's actually four routes.
Yes, of course. I mean, that's the only logical sense that you could make.
I did look it up. So the Japanese title for the game is like a reference to the Four Seasons.
Yeah.
And then I even learned that just now that like the special edition that comes with an art book and stuff for this, for Three Houses, is just called Seasons of Warfare Edition.
Huh.
So there is like a Seasons reference in the English stuff as well. But I think Seasons of Warfare, maybe not the catchiest title. So that's why they went with Three Houses.
Probably just avoiding that Call of Duty weirdness of like putting Warfare in there. Because, I mean, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyways, I got caught off guard by this one because, oh, I picked Edelgard at the start. And that's the one of the three that has a split in the middle.
Oh, oops.
And I went down the wrong side.
Son of a bitch.
So, story-wise, I have this really, like, tragic tale of me accidentally going against the character I wanted to ally with.
No!
And the strategy RPG side, I felt, was much improved from the other game I played, mm-hmm. Fire Emblem Awakening, which is the one I had, like, the three restarts on. So at least this time I knew I'm just going to put it on hard, but then turn off the permadeath. Because I know there may be Fire Emblem purists watching. I don't like permadeath. I think it's a little too punishing, and all you're going to do is just fucking rewind and not let anybody die.
I think sometimes it's just like, no, I think I just kind of want to have fun with the video game.
Yeah. Because like, especially in this one, so you get like a limited amount of rewinds in battle without even having to save scum.
Yeah.
So like, you're just not actually going to let anybody die. Everybody's going to be super strong anyways.
Yeah.
I feel like the XCOM games, having characters get injured, but then be able to come back.
Yeah.
Is a much better
I think
way.
That's
of,
a much better system.
I think that's a better system because it gets you to use other characters while somebody's recuperating.
Yeah. It lets you develop your entire squad. It makes much more sense.
It's more dramatic when, like, oh, my best guy's out, but kept going anyways, instead of, like, oh, they died in one hit, now rewind. Anyways, I thought the strategy stuff was fun. The difficulty was a little up and down, because it got really easy by the end of the first half, and then it got really hard again, mm-hmm. and then it kind of, like, at the four route split.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final boss of the church route that I did first was fucking so hard. It was like a 2-hour
oh my god.
oh, I'm just going to have to clear every single enemy off of this map, aren't I? Because I, like, the first time I'm like, I'm going to rush the boss and not care who dies because they're not actually dying. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, wow, that went insanely poorly. I got wiped. Okay, I'm going to retreat and just slowly destroy everyone. So I really enjoyed the strategy part. I was a little exhausted by the length of the game because right. I put over 100 hours into this fucking thing.
Yeah, it's a long one.
It wasn't like the Zelda tier, but this was my number two Switch game, obviously.
Yeah.
So I was a little exhausted by the length of the game by the first time I beat it, and then I went back and loaded a save from before the split and played the other route. And then after that, so I'm just talking about the gameplay side right now. After beating the Edelgard route, I was satisfied with the game. And then somehow, like a week later, I was like, kind of still want to play more. Like,
fantastic.
Just
it got its hooks in. The feel
of combat was just like, but I'm not going to because it's like, well, now I would have to start one of the other routes from the very beginning. And just, you know,
yeah.
There's a lot of content in this game. There's also a lot of, you know, crossover between with the common route stuff. So it's like, okay, I'm good, but it had its claws in me where I couldn't, like, the feel of one-shotting enemies is always great.
Mm.
Like, oh, I know the weakness here. Oh, I've got my girls on flying Pegasus, mm-hmm. and they just run around and stab shit, and it's just very fun. So back to the story stuff. I had the first route where went against Edelgard by accident.
Oops.
Saw the church route. So the whole time I'm like, oh, the church is obviously evil, right? So, like, we're going to, like, go take them down, the right?
Right.
And then, so there's the three kingdom routes, and then I accidentally end up on the church route where I ally with them. And I'm like, oh, oops. You know, so things don't go well for the kingdoms in that story.
Don't imagine they do.
Yeah, so I finished the game, and, like, you know, I was content gameplay-wise, but I wasn't really content story-wise. Because, right. Like, this isn't how I wanted things to shake out.
No, this is not how it's supposed to go.
And also, I told John about this. When characters A rank with each other, like the support stuff,
mm-hmm.
in the there's little text blurbs in the epilogue, like, oh, and then these two characters got married. And this is probably a thing in all the Fire Emblem games, but I've only played two of them, so I forgot.
Yeah.
So I beat the game, and then I get these little text blurbs, like, and then Bernie married so and so, and I'm like, fuck you, she did.
No, fuck you, buddy.
So two of my girls ended up married, and I'm just like, eh. So again, canonically.
So, I got cucked last year by Trails to Azure, and this year you got cucked by Three Houses.
Yeah.
Except canonically, Byleth can rewind time.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So I used the big rewind.
The big one.
Going into my multiple saves and finding the one closest to where the split back like a year in game time. I'm back in January now.
Worth it.
So I redo 1 month. I do the cutscene with Edelgard, and then I end up on the Edelgard route. And maybe the most satisfying moment in a game this year is when immediately after making the decision, like, because the game warns you like three times, this is an important choice.
Yeah.
You can't back down from this. So I pick Edelgard,
mm-hmm.
and the character immediately personality 180s,
ooh.
Looks at Byleth and goes, you piece of trash.
Wow.
The church does not take kindly to being betrayed.
Wow, dude.
So they are just like, okay, I'm going to now try and kill you.
Holy shit.
I had a whole lot of fun with the Edelgard route. It's shorter, it's snappier.
Mm. Edelgard's awesome.
I mean, from her perspective, what she's doing is
fine. It's fine.
Can't unify a kingdom without spilling a little blood.
That's what I'm saying. Look, gotta crack a few eggs to make a cake.
And then also I managed, even though I didn't have much time back in the common route, I managed to recruit an extra girl this time,
mm-hmm.
which allowed me to have a full squad of only girls, which means the dream of every RPG. in the ending epilogues, nobody got married. Because I refused to let any of them hit A support with the guy. So I had my perfect playthrough and was then content.
I'm glad you had a good time on this one, Rat.
This was a pretty good game. Maybe it should have been number three.
Yeah, it sounds like a number three to me.
Actually, it's four because there's actually four roots.
Oh, there you go.
Game called Three Houses.
In a game called Three Houses.
Nailed it. There's actually two different final bosses in the roots I didn't do.
Oh, damn. Well, that's just more stuff you can go back and do later.
I didn't buy the DLC because I wasn't even sure if I would like this game to begin with. And now I'm like,
Maybe.
I do think there's not enough character classes. It does seem a little restrictive. And I'm just like, oh man, you put the cool shit over there, didn't you? I didn't even look it up because I didn't want to feel like
too
jealous.
Don't want to know.
Yeah. I did have, like, I made the weakest mage girl into a death knight.
Oh.
So she's just riding around in a horse and with heavy armor, but still able to cast magic. And just fucking, like, one-shots everything every time.
So good.
It's fun.
Holly. Three Houses. This one's on my list. I got this game. I got that game brand new for like $20 last year because Walmart.
I was so jealous. I'm like, what the
Walmart did a big dumb and put it on and gave it the wrong price because when I was back at the store later, it was back up to being a $60 video game. So yeah, I got that one for dirt cheap. So yeah, I plan on playing that one at some point. But yeah, I got a number four. And I think
what do you got for us?
You can chalk my number four up to I known about this game or owned it for a number of years, but just never got around to it for some reason. And for all intents and purposes, Sayano Uta is absolutely worth the price that it gets. It's 10
Saya down. Sweep! Saya
it's
sweep!
Saya sweep! It might happen. What's that? Number three? Is it three?
Yep.
Damn. So it's tied with Hollow Cure?
Was there three Honkai Star Rails?
I think yeah.
Yeah.
Do we have an? Yes, Rafe's list had it, and yours did too. So we're tied between Honkai Star Rail and Hollow Cure
and Sayano Uta. What a
that's a trio.
That's a hell of a trio of games, isn't it? Man, Sayano Uta is absolutely worth all the praise that it gets as one of the best visual novels ever, though. Like, a lot of it's already come up a lot, so it's just like, I think, like, the thing that makes Sayano Uta so unique and interesting is that the reason I think that it's terrifying and I classify it as horror isn't because of, like, the violence or anything like that. I think it's just that the main character, Fuminori, like, he had an accident. And ever since the accident, he can only, like, see the world and the people around him as, like, writhing organs and slabs of meat and just rotting flesh. Like, food doesn't taste right. Everything about his view of the world is just, like, fucked beyond recognition. And we spend most of the game in his head. And the only thing that he is capable of seeing as normal is just, it's Saya, the only thing, and for some reason she is the only thing in his world that he can see, and she's just this gorgeous girl that he falls madly in love with, and she's the only person that can relate to him and the only thing that looks normal anymore, and it just ends up being like an absolutely horrifying and touching, it's just a beautiful little romance story. Like, the devotion Saya and Fuminori have toward one another with, like, all these cute and genuinely sincere little moments they have together where it's just like, yes, these are just, like, they're two absolute monsters at this point due to the things that they end up doing to others around them. But at the same time, they're these, like, just cute and sincerely, like, gorgeous expressions of love that they have for one another. Love and acceptance.
A meal. When they share a meal together.
When they share a meal together.
The most romantic thing in the world. And
It's the most romantic thing ever, and also the most horrifying. Just like, it's just, man, it's just genuinely a beautiful story of monsters being genuinely in love because they're all they have. It's
another person seeing you and seeing you as good, yeah, and somebody they want in their life after being very used to that not being true.
Yeah, like it's
and that's really cool.
Like it's relatable.
It's really moving.
It's moving. It's very touching. Like, and again, I think that Elfino touched upon it when he mentioned it in the first episode yesterday, but he brought up that like how like the internet really like gasses this game up as being like, oh, it's the most traumatizing video game ever. You've never played anything more fucked up. And I'm just like, cool. Let me show you guys Euphoria and Maggot Bates.
It's not even the most fucked up Urobuchi VN.
It's not even the most. Yeah, exactly. Like it's violent. It has sex, but it all feels like pretty fucking tame to me, given how, and again, it's just like every fucking YouTube and written review you see for this game, it's just like, oh, it's the most messed up thing you've ever seen in the world. You'll leave this and you'll be traumatized for life. And it's just like, dude, I've seen lighter shit in R-rated movies, you fucking virgin. Shut up. This one, like, for me and my money, like, I will put this one right on the shelf with Planetarian in terms of a nice, brisk VN that I would recommend to people that want to try out the genre, but to somebody who's looking to go a little deeper and something that's geared more towards something a little more edgy and extreme. Yeah. It's obviously a bit more on that extreme side, but I feel that it is just as neat and tightly put together in the same ways that Planetarian is. And I think that makes it just like, I would put those two. Like, if there are two visual novels, I'm going to recommend to people to say, hey, you want to get into visual novels, here's one. It's Planetarian. It's really nice. It's succinct. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It'll probably make you cry. And here's Sayano Uta. It's a little more edgy, but it's also going to give you a lot of really, really, like, just deep, warm feelings. And it's just like, it's earned it, like, man, like, this is one, like, I wish I had just, dove into it sooner, but that, I mean, that's just how, like, building up catalogs of media goes, right? You just get shit, and you carry it around, and you don't really know what you got until you finally just dive into it, and Saya no Uta, the Song of Saya, is just an amazing piece of work. There is, the version they sell on Steam is censored. All the depravity is still there. It's just the images have been cropped in a way to like remove the nudity and stuff. Mm-hmm. But like, far as I can tell, all of like the explanations of like the grotesque things that happen and all of like the very, detailed, instances of sex, which there's not a lot of sex in this.
I think
there's like one
scene that actually feels like a porn scene. And yeah. I think they truncate that one.
Yeah. Like it's really short. The other ones are there for effect. And they don't really, and again, they're not really that common. So it's just like sex is there, but it's just like, hey, if you're in a relationship with somebody, you're probably going to have sex with them. That's just kind of just what it felt like to me anyway. But yeah, Sayano Uta is amazing. I loved it. It's one of my favorite visual novels ever at this point. Like, yeah, like it absolutely earns its spot there. Also, this is also the beginning of the second zone of my list. This is the, this is the, does Polly even play video games anymore? Zone. So that's that. My number four
is the reading zone.
The reading zone. There you go. Like the thing gamers hate the most. But yeah, that's my number four. And I do believe it's time for us to move on to some listener lists. Rhett, do you got one for us?
Yes, this comes in from a flat cap.
Hey, Cappy!
I like the style of this one. Hello. I played 3 games this year. They were all good. To review them, I have written a series of haikus in place of blurbs.
I love Cap. My God.
Persona 5 Royale. Phantoms will decide, an opiate or freedom, but what is justice? Persona
an
4.
An opiate or freedom. Okay, yeah, it's 7.
Okay.
Sorry, that one, like, oh, wait, was that 7? Sorry, I'm being...
I didn't actually count these, I just trusted it. Okay, so next up. Persona 4, Dancing All Night. Mm-hmm. Dance. The world suffocates us all. Can we be ourselves?
Damn, that's good.
Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne.
Oh, goddamn. Yeah, there's a good one. A new world
mega 10-ass list.
I know, right?
That's a good one.
A new world conceived. Can it truly be human? I punched God real hard. Yeah! I love that last line.
Yeah, that game, you can punch God really fucking hard in Nocturne, and it feels really good.
Okay, there is a little bit more to the list.
Okay.
As well, given the struggles against societal norms in the first two games and literal world struggles in the last game, I feel the following quote is apt. The old world is dying, and the new world struggles to be born. Now is the time of monsters. Antonio Gramsci.
Yeah.
I hope this review has been as pretentious as possible. With love, a flat cap.
It wasn't pretentious at all. Dance.
Beautiful.
Absolutely. All right. John!
I'm next.
You are next.
Hi there, kid. Thanks for sending in a list. All right. Hi, I'm one of those people who would get nothing done if it weren't for the last second existing. Final Fantasy XIV, PC, PS4, and PS5, soon to be Xbox. This MMO has taken over my entire life over the past year and a half. It's given me a place to resume some shenanigans with some very old friends, as well as given me an outlet for the kind of person I truly am, while inspiring me to create entirely too much lore for my OC. The community is overall welcoming and or goofy. Yes, like every MMO, there are those tryhards who judge you for DPS uptime and other things that I, as a healer on console, can't really care about. It runs on PS4 rather well. It's about to be released on Xbox, and you don't need a terribly beefy PC to play it. The stories are well-written and do the right level of pandering to fans of the other Final Fantasy games, with the most recent story having driven all my FF4-loving friends absolutely wild. Speaking my language. Content that's all full of fun and puns is still constantly added, and there's seemingly always something to do, even when you finish the main story. Monster Hunter World, PS4, PC. This is my first entry into the Monster Hunter series, and it always seems to draw my friends and family back into it every year. The music is amazing and sticks in your head. The monster mechanics definitely remind you that it's a Capcom game. The graphics still look amazing on a PS4 and incredibly smooth on a PS5 and assumedly PC. Despite the game reaching end of life, there is still a very active community playing, and there's always fun little things to hunt or catch. Newer fans that started in Monster Hunter Rise might balk at the graphics, but there's arguably far more stuff to check out in Monster Hunter World. Honkai Star Rail, mobile PS5.
Damn, there's another one.
I played Genshin to the point of burnout a while back, so I was very hesitant to pick up another Hoyo gacha game. Giving into peer pressure, I gave it a look. The story was fresh enough and interesting enough that I found myself wanting to follow this trailblazer across the stars and see how many things they could beat the crap out of with a baseball bat. My experiences with Genshin allowed me to understand the non-combat mechanics of the game quickly, and the turn-based combat system scratches that classic RPG itch have not gotten to scratch for a while. Hoyo learned some hard lessons in Genshin, and the improvement definitely shows in Star Rail. The music is a total banger, and the graphics are surprisingly smooth on mobile. It also feels less punishing to those that just want to pick it up once every other week or so, and this filthy casual appreciates it. Hopefully it's not too much. I know I tend to ramble. You're fine, friend. Kind of excited to make my first contribution to a SoxCast production. Y'all have fun with it. Kit/cat. Thank you so much for writing again.
Yep. Star Rail. Another Star Rail. Damn.
I think that might win.
I think that actually puts Star Rail over the top.
Oh god, it's at the top right now.
Silver Wolf Sweep!
Deserved.
Alright, I have another listener list for us to enjoy. This one comes in from our good pal Broom Moss, who's a long, long, long serving member of the community and has done so much stuff behind the scenes for us to help keep the show on RSS feeds and the like, so always, always, always appreciated to hear from you, friend. So, let's see what you got. Sorry if this is a little hasty. I've been out of town all week, and I'm throwing this together at 2 a.m. It seems to be a theme this year. Hope it's not too incoherent. Super Auto Pets. It's a mobile game, mostly. You play. You can play it on a PC if you like, but the proper way to play this game is at 4 a.m. when you can't otherwise sleep, buried under your covers so the light of your phone doesn't wake your partner. It's a simplified auto-battler. Each pet has a unique ability tied to an action, such as when the pet in front of this pet faints, gain +1/+1, or when a pet is purchased, give 3 random pets a boost. The abilities play off each other in weird and surprising ways. The meta of the game comes from when you start memorizing the different pets' abilities and can quickly find pairings that work with each other. The art is cute and breezy, the sound effects are great. They didn't know what sound a giraffe makes, so when you buy a giraffe, a lady just says, "Giraffe!" And that's pretty great. I think that's a dumb thing I would do if I were making a video game, so I can appreciate that. Next game is Scourgebringer. Earlier this year, I was in a bad headspace. I had not worked for over a year and was having a very hard time looking for and finding work to support myself. I came across Scourgebringer in a Humble Bundle, and it became my go-to frustration outlet and distraction from bad things. It is a frantic action game where you are tasked with exploring and clearing out a level room by room, utilizing both close combat skills and long-range projectile skills. You need to use both sets of powers constantly and in harmony. When you finally wrap your head around the combat, and it is demanding, you feel like a magic video game wizard. It is exhilarating and might be the hardest game I've ever beaten. The soundtrack switches between beautiful ambient electronica and intense hard rock riffs depending on whether you are in or out of combat. Every level has a different gimmick, which becomes increasingly deranged as you progress. This game gave me the exact same feelings as playing Nuclear Throne for the first time. Whew, boy, that is a game with a lot of feelings.
Yeah.
And finally, Pikmin 4. Remember that summer you just graduated from college, had no prospects, were drinking copious amounts of Thunderbird, spent all day idling in IRC chat, and had condemned your girlfriend's brother's GameCube to play Super Mario Sunshine and Pikmin? Of course you do! It was pretty good, right? That Pikmin game? You played it out of boredom, knowing in your heart that you could never compete with real strategy games like Command & Conquer, Tiberian Arbitorium, or whatever. But you did play it, and gosh darn it, it was fun. Pikmin 4 is so fun to play. They give you a space dog, and it can jump and headbutt, and there's a little arena puzzles and large environmental puzzles and nighttime puzzles and new Pikmin types and friends to find and bugs to collect and treasures to name and even more modes to unlock. All this good, good Pikmin shit that makes your brain tingle. You can play this game a little, put it down, and feel good. You can play this game a lot, put it down, and feel good. It is a perfectly sized game for any time of day. It's the Bagel Bites of game. Man, who loves them some Bagel Bites?
I do.
I am that dork that will go to the store tomorrow and buy pizza Bagel Bites just because of this damn write-up. Son of a bitch. It's so charming, as are Bagel Bites. The world is so vibrant and fun to look at. The Pikmin sing their little Pikmin song when things are going good. It's such a nice place to be. Louis is still a piece of shit. And that does it for our good pal Broommoss. So, I do believe that will move us on to yet another audio submission. So, with that said, I will give us a chance to queue up our good pal Raven's List. And then we will press play in 3, 2, 1, play.
My name is Raven, but you can call me Raven. Sorry, I just feel really, really out of sync. I want to get back into a focused, unified state. I need to synchronize.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Let's do this list backwards and call that the number one most impressive game I played this year. Very challenging, but almost entirely because of 2 simple rules. You must move 2 characters simultaneously and work under a strict timer. It was already polished to a shine and then still got updated. Be proud, Polly. Number 2 is Cobalt Core. Mm-hmm. I'm not huge into deck building as a video game mechanic, but it works in a space dogfight game where it gives you the feel of having to plan a bit ahead, and you can't always make the ideal play. The cartoon animal characters are adorably fun, and even when I lost, it felt a lot more fair than other roguelikes. Last, but it was damn close, is Void Stranger. When a certain guy named John said he was interested in this stylized block-pushing game, I knew I had to buy it. It playfully has you learn a lot via trial and error, but I haven't had to get any walkthroughs or ask for help so far. And the story that unfolds in a deliberate pacing via side scenes, it's gorgeously done, even in pixelated grayscale. I won't cram in any honorable mentions this year. It was a shit time for life, but a great year for games, and I can't gush about them enough. Hope to see you all in 2024.
Thank you so much, Raven. That was a solid list. Wow.
Thank you, Raven.
Synchronized getting another another.
I know. Wow. Tied with Void Stranger.
I'm tied with Void Stranger now. As good as Void Stranger.
And Victim Doll.
And Victim Doll. Damn, I'm in good company.
But better than Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
Get dunked on, Nintendo! All right. Well, I do believe that is going to take us into what I would consider the danger zone of the list. We're hitting the big time now. So, Rhett, I do believe it's time for you to regale us with tales of the number three.
So I was a little surprised that this one ended up so high on my list. I feel like I did play less games this year. I only had like 26 to choose from. Mm-hmm. So out of those 26 games, two of them were Yakuza games.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So my number three is Lost Judgment.
Oh, yeah.
I got really into this one. It's like probably my favorite in a while. I guess I would say like I really like Zero. I liked Four because that was the first one I played. I think the first Judgment did sneak on to.
I think it did. I think the first Judgment made it.
Yeah. Anyways, this game just so I played this fairly shortly after. Yakuza and Like a Dragon Ishin. They're trying to rename this franchise, which is madness to do at this point.
Crazy.
So Ishin was a port of a PS3 game. It definitely felt a little stiff. Lost Judgment, when I played it, was currently the newest game in the franchise, and being like, oh, this is what they actually feel like now. Just the melee combat is just so good to get back to after the JRPG one they did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, the main story is great, but then what really set this one apart for me was that the side stories are like, they're much more integrated into one overall plot this time. Because narratively, like, the main story takes you to a high school, and then, you know, things go to there as you're investigating murder mysteries and stuff. But then it gives you an in there, and then he ends up working for, like, this girl who does, like, the mystery investigation club. And then that turns into like, oh, go investigate the robotics club. And then you have like this whole robot mini game where you're building robots to fight against other robots on this grid-based things. And then it's like, oh, go investigate this boxing gym. And then, oh, there's a whole boxing mini game that like has melee combat that plays completely different from the main game. And then there's like the skate club. There's the esports club. Where you just play Virtual Fighter 5.
All right.
Like, that one's kind of funny because it's really short because they were like, we can't actually make you get good at Virtual Fighter 5. That's maybe not
the scope
of this game.
That would maybe be a little out of the... Yeah, like, what you should be expecting of a player.
Yeah, like, I don't think you could get me good at Virtual Fighter 5 with a month locked in a room with a paid trainer.
That game's got some nuance.
So, yeah, you do like three really easy fights, and then there's one that where it's just the person is like using a bot trainer and kills you in one hit or something.
Nice.
So, but I just thought the way all these mini games and different gameplay styles all tie tied together narratively was really interesting. Like, before the podcast, I was going through my screenshots and I'm just like, man, you do so much in this game versus like Zelda, where there's a few things it does really well, but then you do them over and over and over. Lost Judgment is like, hey, what if you just do a little bit of everything? Like, you, one of the mini games is like joining a biker gang, and there's this whole like race system. There's like,
fantastic. After
beating the game, I found a twin stick shooter in here.
What the shit?
Like, they're just putting so much shit into these because they reused the main cities and engines from the previous games, where they're just like, and now we can just go hog wild on side content.
Yeah. That's so really cool.
Like, compared to the other games where I usually focus more on the main story and then side stuff as it comes up, I kept playing after beating the game because I had all these, the school stories to wrap up. And then once you do everything, there's like this big conclusion to all that, like finding out who this mastermind behind everything is. And I'm like, I think I like the second ending, like the side story ending more than the main story ending, which is crazy. Like, is, and then after you beat that, it unlocks like another side quest for no reason in Kamurocho. Just, oh, by the way, here's like post game.
God. That's crazy.
Yeah, I had a really good time with this one.
Yeah, like this is definitely one I saw a few other people and that I know have been getting into the Yakuza games lately, and this is one where they like, oh, they absolutely spent so much time on this one.
Yeah, this is a really great game. There's also, like, this series has less baggage than Yakuza because, you know, it's only two instead of, like, the eighth game.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a really good and crazy callbacks to the first game where, like, one of the side quests in the first game was this trio of perverts, and they all come back in this one.
Oh, jeez.
So I'm just looking at the screenshots I took earlier today, and there's a character called Ass Ketchum. And then there's, like, I forgot the exact name, but there's, like, the Lord of Perversion, and he's just a guy with a fig leaf.
Of course.
It's beautiful. A fun game.
Beautiful, beautiful game. Video games it's are funny. Perfect.
These games are wild because the main story is so deathly serious, and then you're doing
you do the fucking side quests and the diversions, and they're just the most fucking cracked out shit.
Yeah. They manage tone exceptionally well.
Good.
But just, like, they can be silly and serious together.
Yeah, they can they tie it together because it's compartmentalized well enough that one doesn't interfere with the other.
Yeah. So that's my number three.
That's a solid number three.
Polly.
All right.
Give us a number three.
I've got a number three. We are still balls deep in the Polly, do you even play video games anymore zone. My number three is 2236 AD.
Ooh.
So 2236 AD is a visual novel that it kept popping up on my Steam recommendations for like 2 years. And I didn't really grab it until it was like $3 during a sale. After a friend told me, hey, I just finished reading this visual novel and it's really up its own ass. You'll love it. It's just like, oh, perfect. That's a great, best reason ever to recommend something to me. It's like, okay, I know. Now I know what people think of me. Now I know. Talking about this game, I think it's going to be kind of hard. This is a story that like takes so many buck wild twists and turns and tangents that. While I was playing it, like, every single reaction you can have, I had to it. Like, it was like delight, laughter, anger, frustration, disgust, shock, bewilderment, back to delighted again. The very simple premise, and it doesn't stay this simple for very long, but the hook is that You start the game on April 1st, 2236, and the main character, Yotsuba, receives 99 of the exact same email from someone who he apparently knew and lost contact with at some point. And we don't really understand how all of that happened. And then the game just starts rewinding back bit by bit and to start telling the story about how he met this person. Their very complicated and intricate history together, the unique world of telepathic communication that is at the center of everything, and then it dives off into some whole other psychological shit that I just did not see coming at all. And the way it all unfolds with how its themes are presented and what it's trying to say, it kept my thoughts in flux the entire time. Like, there was no point where I knew where I was going to land on this game. I was constantly like, this is great. I'm very angry and hate this right now. Why is this happening? Oh my God, that's the coolest shit ever. The game's conclusion hit me like a damn truck, and how, like because it addressed some things with, like, how I've had to deal with some things over my own life in terms of things that I've wanted to pursue, and maybe kind of, like, having to look at those things differently, and maybe, like, are those things kind of maybe making you a toxic individual, and things like that. It's I think what makes it click for me, beyond just it being a really intense and great story with a lot of ups and downs, is this is a visual novel that is just, like, and I don't even know how to explain it, it's just amazingly itself. I've never played a visual novel with, like, such a unique voice, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really know how to explain it, because I just feel like every VN obviously has a unique voice, but there's just something about this one, it's a feeling I can't quite put words to, where it's just like, this feels like, I feel like I'm getting to know a person in reading this story. And I have my nitpicks with it, and I think that there are a lot of things I think, like, about this game where most people might even find it just completely boring. It's a story that can meander at times. It needs to stop and elaborate on concepts that can seem, like, really tangential and overwrought. But I think that those are also the moments where, like, the game is, like this. These are the moments where 2236 is very uniquely 2236, and it is a very personal piece of work. Like, the feeling I got when reading this game the whole time was, like, there is a writer, and, like, this is very explicitly saying, I'm really interested in these lines of philosophy and science and the mathematics, and I want to write a story about them, and I want to make it a crazy visual novel. And even if this game doesn't have, like, the grandiosity of something like Fata Morgana or Umineko, it's not, like, it's not maybe as tight a narrative focus like Steins Gate. Like, this one just, when I stopped playing it, I couldn't stop thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a story that I still feel like there is something about this game trying to resonate with me that I haven't settled yet. And that makes it a really cool thing, because it's a game that's just stayed in the forefront of my mind since I completed it. And again, I can't explain why, because I think there's something my brain is still processing about this game.
Seems like it did an art to you.
Yeah, it just, like, it did an art. Like, it's just like, I think in some way I won't look at visual novels 100% the same. And I know that this is not a game that is for everybody. I know that a lot of people are going to read this and be like, this is kind of just fucking boring. Or maybe they'll be grossed out by some of the really kind of uncomfortable places this story goes, because our main character is not very likable. But as Sayano Uta has proven, I think you can have a main character who maybe not the most likable person and still tell an interesting story about this character, why they are who they are, and where they ultimately end up going and finding themselves. And this game just did a number on me in a way that I did not expect. It's one that I just, again, like, I'm still thinking about. And I finished this game in, like, August, I want to say. So, yeah, like, 2236 AD, like, it's a hard recommend, because I know that it's not the most amazing looking visual novel. It's not the most, like, focused. It's a little problematic. And it maybe a run on, like, it ran on tangents that even made me angry, where I was just like, dude, you don't need to explain to me what the meaning of the word meaning is. You don't need to do this for 10 minutes. But I understand
why. Have you ever heard of the cat box?
Yeah. I don't think there's a Schrodinger's. No, I think there's a Schrodinger's cat reference. There's probably a Schrodinger's cat. Like, I'd have to look back. This game tackles so much interesting philosophy and, like, questioning things. And it's just, like, it is a weird piece of work. Like, there are very few characters in it. Like, but it is also, like, 20-hour kind of thing where it's just, like, and again, it's just one of the, and then I read the prequel visual novel, which Alfino mentioned, actually, which was 2236 Secretary Stories, and it was a delight, because I love Masako, who is your, who is the main character's little AI companion, throughout the main game, and, like, you get to spend some extra time with her being happy, and that's always a good time, so, yeah, this game, again, it's a hard recommend. Like, I would want more people to read it, but it's one that I don't think that I could sit here and just say, hey, like, why don't you go read this? Like, because I don't know that it's going to land for everybody. I just know that there's a weirdness here that feels like it appeals directly to me and, like, the five or six other people that I met from having let's played this game and them having, you know, all gathered around this one unique thing that we all kind of have in common that we all just really liked for some reason and that nobody else seems to kind of know about or give much of a chance to. But if you want a visual novel that's just really on the weird and maybe off-putting at times side, 2236 AD is about the best recommendation I can give you for that. I'm sorry I rambled so much on that one, fine. But, like, my brain is, again, my
still
brain.
Still processing.
I am still processing this game somehow. It's a very interesting piece of work. All right.
I looked it up on Steam and it only has 70 reviews. So I'm like, oh, this one's niche.
Yeah, it's.
Hell yeah.
The fact that people found my Let's Play and, like, they were like, yeah, we have a Discord and, like, we were posting it in there. I was like, oh, geez.
It's called Still Processing.
Yeah, it's called Still Processing. But yeah.
We just can't stop name searching this game because we're still processing.
Yeah, we're all still processing. That, like a couple of people have literally said, like, it's my favorite visual novel of all time. It's like, geez, man.
Wow.
It's like I said, it's an interesting piece of work that it's hard for me to recommend because I know it's not the most outwardly flashy and attractive thing in the world, but it's a weird one and it'll play with your brain if you let it.
And you did put it over Sayano Uta. Which I didn't expect.
I didn't expect it either. That was literally a last-minute change.
Oops.
That was literally a point where it was just like, man,
This spoke to you, Polly.
I just could not get it out of my brain. And I was just like, yeah, it deserves the nod. It deserves the nod over Sayano Uta. As much as I love Sayano Uta, like, I've got to give this the nod here. Like, I think this one deserves it.
It sounds like Saya has a much broader appeal.
Yeah. That's the thing. Sayano Uta, absolutely.
It sounds like Sayonara has a much broader appeal, but this spoke specifically to you.
Yeah. This spoke to all the things that I like just like all of the weirdo parts of my brain where I like to go sometimes philosophically, and this game was just like speaking that language. It was really fun. Really good stuff. Like, if more people try it out, if even one person tries it out after this, you know, I'll have done my work, I feel. So, yeah. That's my number three, 2236 AD. John!
Fuck yeah. That's me.
How are you doing?
So, I know I said last year that I wasn't going to put too many RPGs on, as many RPGs. And I didn't. But, you know, a couple still managed to sneak their way on the list. My number three is... this game's so fucking good. My number three is System Shock.
Oh, God. Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's real fucking good, yo.
System Shock is chunky as fuck, my guy.
Uh-huh. I sampled it, in high school, probably. I played, like, two or three maps. I played the original, the CD version of on DOS, DOSBox, and it's a lot. It's a lot to engage with because you have, like, 15, you use, like, 15 keys on the keyboard to handle character movement.
Yeah.
Because you can move left and right, you can strafe, you can lean forward and lean back, lean left and right.
Yeah, it is a complicated fucking game, baby.
Mm-hmm.
I played the enhanced edition on Steam, which is not the new remake that I think came out this year. It's a source port, so it has the same art, but it has mouse look and you can up the resolution. So it feels just like the old game. The music, voice acting is the same. The story is the same. The mechanics are the same. It just has mouse look, and boy, that makes a big difference.
That makes a huge difference, baby.
This is just one of the best. This is like some of the most fun I've ever had dungeon crawling. This is a pure strain dungeon crawl.
This is chunky.
Yeah.
If there's a game that is chunky, yeah, this game's chunky as shit.
Uh-huh. You just, like, it's like the game of you are on an abandoned yeah. space station. Everything's going to hell. There's blood on the walls. You find audio logs, pick them up. I feel like there's just a straightforwardness and, like, deliberate propulsiveness to how this game works.
Yeah.
Where, like, all of the imitators, they feel like they kind of lose something in comparison, the Bioshocks and all that, where it's just, like, the plot line of Shodan has taken over the space station. She wants to destroy Earth. And everybody else on this space station, almost everybody else on the space station is dead.
Mm.
You are the only one who can stop them. You are a hacker. You are not, like, super strong or anything. You need to make your way through this space station and find a way to survive and to defeat Shodan. And it's just this really cool dynamic because Shodan is a program. She doesn't have a body. She just comes, she's like, so she can't directly attack you. She can send monsters at you or genetically fucked up versions of the crew. She can, she can lock doors. There's a couple times where she sets a bomb in a room and then locks the door while you're still in it.
If you need an analog, then you're not. Yeah, it's very GLaDOS.
It's GLaDOS, but played like completely straight.
Played straight. Yeah.
Where she's just legitimately very scary.
Yeah.
but there's a level of like power fantasy to it where you are just like worming your way through this machine like a virus, taking, like, she has like three different plans for destroying the Earth. She has like wants to fire a big laser at it. She wants to let loose a big virus, and the scenario is so propulsive because like you're not being guided around by anybody. You're just like organically like, well, yeah, you need to stop that. It's not because somebody told you to. It's just the way the game, like, the scenario plays into the way the scenario like keeps you moving feels so like pointed and dramatic.
Yeah, I really like the way that the analogy you made of like you are the virus snaking your way through this computer system basically is really just like how I felt playing that.
Yeah, exactly. And just like as she gets more and more incensed and more creative, like you feel like you kind of develop a relate where she starts off just, she literally, the first line she says to you directly is, "Who are you?" Just like very, just like quizzical. Like,
yeah,
you're on many of my records. What's the deal? Who are you? I thought everyone else on the ship I know, but not you. And then by the end of it, she's so mad.
Livid.
And like the whole climax of this game, it's just like, it's honestly like really retcore, where it's just like Aliens climax for like 3 hours.
Oh God.
It's fun. It's really good.
There's like escape sequence. There's timed escape sequence. There's giant ass vertically oriented final dungeon. There's another final dungeon on top of that. There's great music for the final dungeons. Its cred as an RPG is as strong as, you know, like the Falcom games love talking about.
Yeah, System Shock is really good, and I'm pretty sure that like that remake is a solid way to play it.
The remake sounds like great. Very tactful.
I watched Angry Ed play a bit of it, and it looked really really fun. So,
Yeah, I'm glad that it seems like the people that made the new game kind of get what's good about the new one. And I especially just love that it's it maintains a lot of the same color, like the same color palette even.
Yeah.
Because like I was worried it would be like really dreary and gray and gunmetal.
No, but
they kept the colors.
They kept the actual, like the vibrance of that game is still.
It's so saturated and gorgeous.
Yeah. I love the saturation. It's really good.
The music. So yeah, I think this is just a great RPG.
Yeah.
I think that it kind of opened my eyes of like, we've all kind of developed an affinity for like a couple specific RPG languages, like the Falcom RPG language, what a Falcom Final Dungeon means.
Yeah.
And System Shock to me is like, hey, there's a ton of different ways you can kind of achieve the same resonance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
This arc. And in the format, in this case, in the format of like a really obtuse first person dungeon crawler, mm-hmm. just control wise. But then you get, once you get start vibing with it and you figure out and you kind of make your way in, it's also just massive. It's this huge 3D maze. Like, I've mostly played like id games from that era. Mm-hmm. Doom isn't true 3D.
No.
System Shock is true 3D. So it has vertical stages and it's wild playing a 1994 game with vertical 3D.
That's how just cool that absolute is. Like when you consider what where we were at, like when Doom was kind of like the torchbearer at the time, and it's just like and you couldn't even do vertical. You know, you couldn't do verticality in those games.
Mm-hmm. It's buck wild. It's so pretty and cool. So yeah, that's kind of my System Shock arc.
Cool. Rhett,
hi.
Do you have a listener list?
Do you have a listener list on hand?
Do you have a listener list?
I do. This comes in from Ghosty.
She's not going to be very happy that you took her wrist. But them's the breaks.
Okay. This list says, I had a lot of trouble choosing this year. I won't back down. And then there's like a little crying emoji. I think this list is amazing because all of these games have not been mentioned yet.
Oh, shit!
Holy shit.
Just the diversity on play here is just crazy. Okay. Number 3, Unreal Life.
Ooh.
This game is very blue, literally and figuratively. 195 is my friend. A dreamlike and touching game. Number 3, Mushroom Museum. Humans are so strange. What's a mushroom girl to do? Lovely art, vibe, and writing.
Mm.
Number 3. Last Command. Shmuppy Snake. In a digital world where humans no longer exist, can you save the malfunctioning programs? This one is intense. Also, cute anime girls.
Yeah.
Number 2. Arcadia Fallen. Enjoyed this Vienna a great deal. Liked how my character felt like a character I made, not a stock character with bland, samey responses. The puzzles are nice and the character craft is great. Mime is precious. Voice acting is top-notch.
My oven makes the same sound, John.
I'm muted.
No, I'm just saying, my oven makes the same.
It's nice, isn't it?
It's pleasing.
And number 1, Sea of Stars.
Mm.
Meaty Little Adventure.
For really Sea of Stars back.
I know, right? First time. Meaty Little Adventure really hit the spot for me. Tells a familiar story in a very different way. Garl is best boy forever. And that's it.
Nice.
Thank you, Ghosty.
Yeah, Unreal Life is one I want to actually get around.
With just 3 games on it.
Just 3 games. I mean, she said a lot about 3 games.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. All right, next list is from Braleff. In no particular order, I present Infernax. This loving throwback to early Castlevania does the genre better than even most of the official games. There's a weirdly huge number of playable characters, a fantastic co-op mode, and a surprisingly in-depth morality system that affects your ending. It's just a video game-ass video game, and I can see myself returning to it again and again. Cultic. I played a small variety of boomer shooters since last December, and Cultic was the first. It's also easily my favorite of the bunch, which I'll chalk up to the starting weapon. The hatchet is one of my new favorite starting weapons in any game. It's satisfying, powerful, and good enough to carry you through most of the game by itself. Ooh. Going forward, I'll be judging every starting weapon, pistol, or knife in every shooter by that standard, so that's worth a spot for me. Baldur's Gate 3, mm-hmm. Second mention.
There you go.
Is this only the second mention?
Yeah. I love it when a game lets me throw random bullshit in the environment at people, especially when that bullshit includes other people. Baldur's Gate 3 scratches that itch better than probably any other game I've played. I spent the entire playthrough picking dudes up and using them to bludgeon other dudes to death. So it probably deserves Gaudi for that more than any of the other stuff everyone praises about.
Yeah, it's pretty solid.
This is why it's actually good.
Okay. We needed somebody like Brawliff to point out the real intricacies of why Baldur's Gate deserves the accolades.
I wonder if you just need to put like everything into strength to do that. Like all I'm specced for is picking up other dudes.
That's a great spec, isn't it? It's the pick up other dudes build.
Yeet.
If right. Red, I think you best have put Iffy's list on here twice.
No, that's not what happened at all.
What? No,
there's a very specific reason that Iffy has another list on this list that's going to be read by me. Allow me to elaborate.
All right.
Iffy presents Wifies of the Year.
Yeah,
let's go. All right, now I know you're back on board. Right, John thought we were going to do some shenanigans. We were going to play favorites just because Iffy's wife of the year, she gets two game of the year lists. That's not how it goes. It's not how we're playing. We'd still play favorites either way, but
yeah, I still kind of did.
Anyway, wifey of the year number 3, Sally from Beaufooty. I don't want to get hurt, so I'll max out my defense.
This show looks so cute.
One look at Sally really screams Iffy, from her physical design to her use of twin daggers and agility, but on top of that, she ended up being a fun character and a great foil to Maple. I very much relate to her position on an MMO team, and she never gets the credit she deserves. It's a big part of why I enjoyed Beaufooty so much.
They just put IF in a game.
Yeah.
It really is a very extremely similar character.
Number 2, Milam Nava. That time I got reincarnated as a slime. It's no surprise that I fell in love with the cute, fetishy demon girl, but she stole my heart the moment I saw her. As a fellow demon lord, she's definitely goals. I can't decide if Milam or Veldora was the funniest character from Slime, but they both continually cracked me up, and I think it helps that they made them both completely overpowered in the silliest ways. I can't wait to see more of Milam in Season 3, and I hope that she gets to flex her crazy demon dragon powers even more. All right, everybody. Final word on the matter. From the actual Wifey of the Year herself, who is Wifey of the Year? It is, of course, none other than Silver Wolf from Honkai Star Rail. The reason I gave Star Rail a shot in the first place, Silver Wolf's character design and playful attitude are top-notch, and her being voiced by Melissa Fawn made it even better. She was able to add a Neptune-like personality to Silver Wolf. She was able to add a Neptune-like personality to Silver Wolf, and there's no way the similarities in character design are a coincidence. On top of being funny and cute, she ended up being incredibly useful in combat. God, she's so broken. She ended up being incredibly useful in combat and fun to build a team around. Wifey of the Year was meant to be when I got 3 of her in a single 10 pull. This is not a lie. She had the most god tier pull. And like people fake screenshots like this all the time, but Iffy actually did it. She pulled 3 Silver Wolves back to back in the same 10 pull. That the odds of that happening are like 1 in 200. That's times 3. So that's a lot. That's probability. Oh. However that math works.
Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah. So she pulled a Silver Wolf.
That's a summoning salt number.
She pulled a Silver Wolf, hit a normal character, then got a Silver Wolf, then another Silver Wolf. Like right after the other. So it's just like, what the fuck? On the same 10 pull. That's absolutely astonishing. Just the stupidest luck I've ever seen. All right. So we have our next audio submission to get to. And this one comes in from our good pal, Psychic Heist. And we're going to press play on that in 3, 2, 1, go.
Hey, Soxcast. It's Psychic Heist. I'm going to make this one fast. I'm still preparing for Album of the Year, but I didn't want to miss the deadline for Game of the Year. And before we get talking about my favorite three games this year, I do want to give a quick shout out to Final Fantasy 16 and Void Stranger. I'm enjoying those quite a bit, but I'm just not close to finishing them. But I feel like if I had like another month, they would probably be mentioned here. So my favorite three games this year are the ones that brought me the most comfort in an otherwise pretty rough year. They are Diablo II Resurrected, which is probably the only win I will begrudgingly give Activision Blizzard. But they did great on this one. It's pretty much just good old-fashioned Diablo 2 with minor quality of life adjustments and very pretty graphics. But they also give you the option to switch to the original look of the game at any time. So that's pretty neat. And, you know, a game like Diablo 2 is just something I can play forever. Its gameplay loop is just goated. Another game I was really into this year was Everybody's Golf. I swear for like a quarter of this year, Everybody's Golf is all that I played. I think what it kind of lacks in budget, it just makes up in charm. It's got just really fun characters, a really fun world. The golf courses are good. It's very easy to learn. And this was just a game that I could just chill and vibe with and lost a lot of hours in. And finally, I want to give a shout out to Honkai Star Rail.
Oh my God.
This is the first gacha game I have played seriously. It was a new experience for me. There are still things about it that are just driving me up the wall and just kind of redundant and overboard with its certain leveling systems and bazillion currencies. It really kind of just makes me laugh how stupid it kind of goes in that regard. Yet at the same time, Star Rail has probably been the most immersive video game world I found myself in this year. You know, it does so well to build its characters and the world. And, you know, I just found myself spending hours just kind of reading news articles and journals and flyers and recipes and any other kind of like written thing in the game. It's got a good story. It has engaging characters. And yeah, you know, a good deal of them are hot. And they're hot on purpose.
Oh, yeah!
But they're just also, like, just really fucking cool. And yep. I just love all their different flashy abilities. And also, like, the turn-based combat in this game is just really, really satisfying. Like, it might just be, like, my favorite turn-based combat in a role-playing game.
By Trails.
You know, so despite some of the bullshit of the game, it's a game that every time I start it up and I hear the main theme play on the login screen, I just get a cozy feeling like I'm coming home to a warm fire on a hard, cold day. And that's a feeling I value a lot these days. So there you have it. I will see y'all around and all my love, Psychic Heist.
And yeah, Star Rail. Nice. Star Thanks Rail so just much. Running away, man. Like it's.
I don't think it can be caught now. There's only a few left.
That's yeah. Like I think that it just like yeah, it just speaks to that game. Like I think
it got you an iffy. The people I thought so would funny. Never fall for like that type of game.
And like the leveling stuff makes sense when you realize they really just kind of just want you to level your character up 10 levels at a time and then just wait and then just like wait until you build up because you just you get those levels and like you need to graduate to those next levels. at a pretty decent clip if you're just engaging with the game. Like, I found that, like, just anytime I needed to, like, make the jump to the next 10 levels was just like, yeah, this feels right. Like, this feels... So I just always saved up. I never, like... I never leveled a character unless I could level them 10 levels. So I think that's just how you play that game. But yeah, like, Star Rail's just fucking good, y'all.
I played Diablo 1 this year for the first time.
Diablo 1's good.
It feels real good. It has a real nice loop.
Yeah, yeah. Diablo 2 is, like, that's a classic for a reason, too. So I absolutely see why that's there. Like, that Diablo 2 is amazing.
So, yeah. Is that, I guess that remaster is good now. I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds like they've knocked out all the issues that they had on launch. Okay, so good, it sounds solid now. All right. With that, I guess it is time that we move on to our number twos, and I will be starting this one off, I think. With I'm pretty sure, like, the rest of my list is predictable, at least to Rhett, but we'll go ahead and, you know, like, I'm gonna cheat a bit on my number two.
I am like a rock. Like, just... everything bounces off me. I don't absorb anything. I'm just like a stupid sponge, water sponge.
You are.
Nothing clicks.
Yeah.
As the game of the years go by, I just am like surprised by everything. I'm like, did not consider. So it always just hits me as a surprise. It's great.
All right. That's good. That's good. So my number two, I'm going to cheat a bit on this one because I feel that this is an entry where both halves are needed to be absolutely recommended for the full enjoyment resolution. Butterfly Soup is so outrageously... Yes. Shut up. Oh, God. I love Butterfly Soup. It's so outrageously, like, everything that it is. Like, it's just so outrageously loud and everything that it's saying and doing that I don't know how you can ignore it. Like you said, like, you had it on your list so long and, like, you kept trying to no, it was still loud and charming enough. It's like, no, you're going to pay attention to me. And that's what happened. Like I don't know what else I can say about this game that we haven't already said, like, when we went over it previously when John brought it up. Like, it's just these characters are simultaneously, like, incredibly hilarious, but they're all, you know, struggling to figure their shit out like teenagers have to. It's believable. It's grounded. I feel that, like, there is a character that everyone can relate to in these games. I feel like you will find yourself, you will find the things, some things that you struggled with, you know, and it's, yeah, like, it's, I think that this game, like, handles, like, that dichotomy of being both a drama and a comedy in a way that's so perfectly balanced and beautiful that I don't know, like, I don't know that there's another game that can do it like that. I've never seen it handled with such precision, I guess. Like, I think that that's really the thing, is that, like, these games feel very precise. Both of them are, what, 2.5 hours or so? So, like, they somehow still manage to, like, get a whole shit ton of character across in such, like, a really small amount of time. Like, I think that if there's something I can attribute to these two games that is something that always, like, I love seeing, is that, like, I don't know that you could be a more confident game than these two games are. Like, they're just so out there as everything that they are. Like, these games know they're good. Like, and that confidence just radiates in everything they do, every line of dialogue. Like, they're just absolutely two of the best visual novels I've ever read, which I will count as one visual novel, because I think you just, again, like John agreed, you kind of need both halves for that too.
Yeah.
I guess, like, I think the only thing I could really say other than that is that, like, no game said anything more beautiful to me this year than to keep trying and eventually you'll find people who like you for the weird fuck up you are. You deserve to be happy.
Beautiful.
And if an alligator attacks you, go for the eyes. I love Butterfly Soup. I think they're just amazing. I think everybody should read them. If you have any passing interest at all in visual novels or stories that are like cute and fun and just full of characters that you will absolutely love to pieces by the end, like there's no better pick than Butterfly Soup 1 and 2. Rhett, go read Butterfly Soup is what we're fucking saying.
When's the post coming?
Everybody will come away with a character that, like, oh, she's just like me, for real.
Yeah, there's that. Everybody has that. That character is there. I guarantee you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like these characters.
That's the universal.
Yeah.
It's the new Sex in the City, which are you?
Yep, Butterfly Soup 1 and 2. That's my number 2. So, John!
Been jazzing myself up for this.
Jazzing yourself up. You got a number 2.
Motherfucking hate machine to get up. My number 2 is Sigil.
Oh, God, yeah! Yeah!
Second Doom rep.
More Doom representation on this list. Sigil! It's
basically the same as Eternal.
Yeah.
I fucking love this game, y'all.
Oh, Sigil is so one of the best fucking Doom mapper on the planet, making the most like advanced, crazy fucking mind warp Doom that he can. It's so fucking incredible.
Like my favorite maps, Doom maps in Doom 2, especially were I'd go into the list later and be like, oh yeah, that was a Romero joint. And a lot of the times my favorite Doom 1 maps, yep, that's a Romero joint.
Like, anytime I hated a Doom 2 map, right? American McGee, of course.
Doom 1 is pretty easy. When you get to Doom 2, that was when I started like having these maps where I was like just sitting there for like 2 hours, like trying to be,
what am I doing?
Just like, because I wouldn't save. I would just keep bashing my head against them, and it felt so fucking good.
It does.
When I was a kid, I played through Doom once with saves the whole time, mm-hmm. and I just kind of, it took like 2 hours, and then I was like, well, I guess that's Doom, and I never didn't think about it anymore. So then, like last year or the year before, I just started playing Doom like without saves.
Right.
And it just brought the games to life to me. It's like, oh, now I have to actually think about where these levels are. I have to actually figure out like where items and whatnot are. Ammo matters because I'm pistol starting.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so satisfying. And then when I got to Doom 2 and the levels got a lot harder and longer, Industrial Zone, I was there for probably 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
The Living End at the end was just stunning, and it's so vertical.
Mm-hmm.
They just like knocked me on my ass. Like, oh, I didn't realize Doom could be like this.
Yeah.
I love Doom. Doom 1. I think it has more. Like, I think in becoming kind of more video game in Doom 2, you do lose some of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
But Doom 2, in comparison, does have that kind of that final level. That climactic buildup and payoff that you don't really get in Doom 1.
Yeah.
And to me, Sigil just kind of is that payoff. It's like, okay, here is the finale of Doom. It's a whole episode that just feels like an extended final dungeon.
Yeah, it's so good. Like the way that he uses that map language in ways that it's just like, it's so wholly unique. And it's just like, why did I never think of this? Like, why did no other map makers think of like using the Doom engine like this? You know, it's very, very, like, it's so dense. It's so detailed. It's just, God, it's like it's like an explosive orgasm of Doom.
it's both this and System Shock. Like,
yeah.
Just Western devs with impeccable final dungeon aesthetics.
Yes.
Which is really important to me. It's important to all of us.
Hell yeah.
As Falcom fans. that is the connecting thread from our normal socks aesthetics into a lot of these games. Sometimes
you just have impeccable Final Dungeon aesthetics, and that's sigil just all the way through. When you get to I think it's Riot Squadron. Oh my god, yeah, that's the fourth stage track. It is just like,
oh god, yeah.
energy. The really slow track watching you.
Mm-hmm.
I've been listening to James Paddock all year. Also, he has his own albums and eight EPs.
Yeah,
I love his MIDIs and I love his original work.
Yeah, they're really good.
I don't think Romero's maps here, because they're very almost linear in the sense that you usually only have one chart place to go. You're following a specific script through these levels. And that's not, you know, how all Doom levels are, and it's not how all Doom levels should be. But it just feels real good in my brain. Yeah. I just really like how his levels play out.
Yeah, you're just kind of flushed through these mazes in very fun and inventive ways, in very propulsive ways, that it's just like, you don't really, you don't think about the linearity that much while you're doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's obvious, like, again, like, if all of Doom 1 was that, I think you would lose something special about Doom 1. But just as, like, an action game experience, just as, like, something I sit down and play compulsively for, you know. Because I played it without saves the first time on Hurt Me Plenty, and it was really hard. Yeah. And then I went back and did it on Ultra Violence, and it was really hard!
Yeah, Sigil on Ultra Violence, it ain't no joke.
Uh-huh. So this is one where I spent probably like 15, 20 hours in this Doom episode.
Yeah.
And it was so satisfying. And Doom Sigil 2 just came out. I'm pretty jazzed about it.
Yeah, it literally came out on Doom's 30th birthday. That feels real good. I've played the first level, and man,
I have too. It's real hard.
It's a whole fucking lot.
So I'm gonna need to graduate to fully to mouse and keyboard for that one. I think.
Yeah, you're gonna have to. I think.
I can't keep squigging, like barely scraping by with my stupid gamepad. Oh my god, I fucking love Sigil. Sigil's I've had so much so fun. I've had so much fun playing Doom the last few years, and this was kind of the climax of that. I love this episode to bits.
Mm-hmm. It's real good.
It is my favorite Doom episode at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, I can like sit here and think back to like certain moments, and it's just like, man, that's fucking brilliant. And it's like, God, it like, and it lives up to and surpasses so much of the best stuff in that original game too. So it's like, it might be like the best. It might be the best episode. Whew. Yeah,
I feel like I know that other people have like. There's a whole history of Doom maps.
Oh
and whatnot.
God, yeah.
We can talk for hours about Doom 1 history.
Yeah, exactly. I guess the one big thing for me is that it's not a slaughter map. That's something I haven't really figured out my way into yet.
I'm not a big.
Is that the one where it's just like hundreds of enemies?
They're not.
I saw one of those a video and I was just like, oh, that looks ridiculously.
Yeah, I mean, there's ones where there's like the. Ones that are like 100,000 enemies, but then there's just in general, there's a lot of wads that have like 800 enemies in the map or 1,000 enemies in the map, and that's a very different flavor. Sigil is hard and demanding, but a big part of that is just putting you in like cramped spaces where you have to think creatively about how to deal with enemies, and then the enemies themselves, there's usually not actually that many. So, yeah, love Sigil to bits. That's my number two.
Yeah. That's solid.
Rhett,
what's your number two?
Okay, we all know this had to be on here.
Oh, gee.
My number two is The Legend of Heroes Trails into Reverie.
I wasn't sure, but I had a feeling it was going to land on your list.
I'm not going to come here and put Trails automatically Game of the Year every year. There's one year. So like in 2019.
Give it number two.
Huh?
I
give it number two. Okay. I will work up to justify that. But just a little history. In 2019, I played the Trails Sky Trilogy. And then my Game of the Year was Wandersong.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then in 2020, I played Zero and thought, this was my least favorite one so far.
Mm-hmm.
And then it won Game of the Year over fucking 13 Sentinels. And I fucked that up. Why, that was the wrong choice.
That was not a good call.
That was the wrong call. Okay, I admit that. And then a 0-1 the next year, which I stand by.
Yeah, you'll have one text box push it over 13 Sentinels. You'll have one text box push a 60-hour game over 13 Sentinels.
It's a good text box, to be fair.
Look, it's a good text box. We all know it's a good text box.
I don't even think it was that. I think it was because I wanted to make a 1-0 joke.
Oh.
But nobody remembers that.
No.
For me. Anyways, and then last year I played fucking 4 Cold Steel games.
Yeah, you did. You beast, you machine, and, you.
Was Azure on your list last year too? When was
No, Azure was the game of the year after Zero.
It was Zero, Azure, and then all of Cold Steel.
Yeah.
I'm so mad I put Azure over Baldur's Gate.
No, I think
that was my wrong call.
Azure's the best game I've ever made, so. So I've played a lot of these, and they've all done very well. They've all been number 1 or 2.
Yeah, actually, they're very retcore.
They've all been number 1 or 2. Trails into Reverie is a weird one because it's an epilogue to Crossbell and Cold Steel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the very, very first 20 minutes are awesome. I was so happy to see everyone.
Oh, yeah,
again.
Absolutely.
Started very high, and then there's a plot development that I just fucking hated. So it's like the characters, you're kind of thrown into a very vulnerable and weak spot. Like, it starts from the bottom.
Yeah.
Because I was just so frustrated with where things immediately turned to.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, we're just kind of undoing everything.
Hooray!
This game starts with a low point, and then I think it works itself up and kind of gets better and better as you go.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, because I don't want to talk for an hour about it, I started to like this game significantly more after beating it.
Interesting.
Okay.
Because there's just so much game here.
Yeah, this is probably the most packed a Trails game has ever been. Hey, here's a bunch of content.
Which is weird because it has like the shortest, probably the shortest main plot, at least in a while.
Yeah, yeah.
And a huge negative is that like there's no side quests because there's no free roam in the main story at all. So anyways, you beat the main story and it kind of worked itself up. I did like the finale. And then it kind of puts you back in the Reverie Quarter, which is like this infinitely randomly generated dungeon that you can do. And it's like, hey, you can play around here more. Maybe there's something that'll happen if you keep going.
Maybe.
So you do a few. They give you one thing right then. Actually, I think you have to do a little bit to get the first. There's a gacha system in this game.
Yeah.
You gotcha for fucking scenes.
Yeah, you have
and, to. Cut scenes. Yeah, it's so weird.
It's imagine if you had to pull for the doors in Trails Third. I might get the Tita door. Oh no, I got the fucking Chloe door again.
What's this Chloe slander?
It's a 2-hour door that has no, it's just there's nothing but running around and talk. It's just a funny
meme. I know, that's great.
It's a funny meme. I think it's good, but it's a funny meme among, the Trails players that, it's the Chloe door.
There's also character gacha, which is wild.
Yeah.
You get characters that you haven't ever played as before. They're just oh, I'm here now, I guess I'll join your party. Yeah, I mean, there's weird things like how in Sky Third the Rendor was very deliberately placed.
Uh-huh.
And then, and then this one, they're just, the doors are in a gacha system.
Yeah, they're just in a gacha system now.
There are a few that are kind of intentionally given to you at certain points, but anyways, there's a lot of post-game story actually if you keep going into that dungeon.
Oh yeah.
There's a whole nother story arc. It's not super long,
mm-hmm.
but I was just really pleased with how that played out as a extension to a couple characters that I really like. Altina and Hia is there too.
Mm-hmm.
It ties back into Azure in a crazy way that I didn't expect.
Mm-hmm.
When the writing's good, it's good. It's just, it's so weird how this game got off onto such a bad start.
Yeah.
Because of maybe this is Trails Excesses at its worst, where they say, what if we redeem everyone ever who isn't dead at this point?
Cool, 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 cool.
That's where Reverie kind of hit a sore spot for me. It's just there's so much of that.
Yeah. But to kind of speed through this, I really did enjoy the post-game story. I really enjoyed doing the post-game dungeon. And then there's all the doors. Like, I saved basically all of them for the end. I'm not even sure if they're actually called doors, but all the side story stuff. And there's like 30 of them or something. Like,
the daydreams.
Daydreams. That's what this is a whole other like game there of just mostly cutscene stuff. And I'm just like, that stuff felt way more appropriate as like a Cold Steel 4 epilogue than the actual main story did.
Yeah, that's what
it's frustrating because the main story is like 3 months later and all this takes place in that interim period.
Yeah.
But then if you finished everything, there's a little bit more that goes forward into Calvard.
Oh, interesting.
I quite enjoyed the little glimpses they give you into characters that are in the next games.
What Daybreak might entail.
Yeah. So it's called like a look past and a look forward. So you get some kind of very cool visual novel stuff that happens in Calvard.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. And then there's all the minigame stuff, and then there's the whole Magical Girl one.
The Magical Girl one, it's so good. It's very stupid.
Yeah. That was, like, the very, very final thing I actually finished, and, like, the way that ends, like, the sequence at the end there, I felt like a very fitting farewell to that group of characters.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really like this one, even if it's the weakest Trails game in a while. Yeah. Number two on my list. That's, like, no bias here.
Right? No bias. I was like,
honestly, for a bit, I thought this might win.
See, that's what I was waiting for. I was waiting for it to be number one, and now I don't know.
I think just the fact that I do have maybe more apprehension about this one overall compared to like any other Trails game is what kept it from number one.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I still thought still a solid entry in the series that basically can't miss for me.
Yeah. Solid. Solid.
Yeah.
Life is good.
It is. Video games are fine sometimes.
This game is fine.
It's
number two.
Fine. All right. If that is your number two, then we have our final listener list and audio submission of the year.
It's the moment we've all been waiting for.
The moment we've been all been waiting for. This one comes courtesy of our good pal, Jessica. And I'm going to cue that up, and we're going to roll in 3, 2, 1, play.
Last time on Socks Make People Sexy. Jessica recorded a Game of the Year list for the first time, but now in 2023, the AAA game industry has dropped the ball. She'll have to come up with a list of retro and indie titles if she hopes to survive. Will she be able to
get one in
her time? Find out now. A new power awakens. Game of the Year. 2023.
Number 3. Oh, duh, it's Dragon
Ball Z. Oh,
fuck yeah.
What?
Fuck yeah.
Oh my god.
After a long time, your girl finally got herself a laptop this year.
Holy
it's
shit.
Allowed me to finally create my own website, dabble in emulation, and more importantly, play some damn Poly games. Poly Dungeon is an absolute delight. I was smiling ear to ear every time as I clicked my way through the dungeon, only to find Poncho Smith stole my damn HP. Short, sweet, with awesome music and a pretty good twist final boss. I could not put Poly Dungeon on this year's Game of the Year list.
Fantastic.
Exquisite.
Number 2. What Sonic game is this?
In a world where Sega refuses to re-release anything but the same 30 Genesis titles over and over again, the Yakuza team delivers the only official way to play Daytona USA 2 Power Edition at home. The game definitely has a different vibe from the original game. The opposing racers are much more likely to ram into you, the handling feels looser, and the music is pure 90s butt rock. None of these detract from the experience, however, and rather give Daytona USA its own distinct identity. The game is fun as hell, and I'm glad I can finally play it.
It's number one.
Last year, we saw the release of Sonic Frontiers, an open-world game that evolved the 3D Sonic formula. This year, we got a return to form, a Genesis-style Sonic game that captures what made those original titles great. That game is not Sonic Superstars, but rather Sonic Triple Trouble 16-bit.
Nice.
It's a reimagining of the original Game Gear title and the gameplay style of Sonic 3 and Knuckles. The main campaign sees you playing as both Sonic and Tails, who can be swapped at the press of a button. It feels so natural, you have to wonder why they haven't done it in more official titles. The level design is rock solid, every stage having its own gimmick or set piece that complements the base gameplay, the controls are tight, and the music is amazing, Sunset Park Act 3 being the absolute peak. Sonic Triple Trouble 16-bit is a dream to play. It has easily become a go-to game to just throw on for an afternoon, and that's why it wins this year's Game of the Year.
Killer.
Hey everyone, Jessica here. Boy, it's been hard to believe that it's already been a year. I know it's been difficult, but I know all of us can face the challenges 2024 will bring us. And I'm glad I'll be able to spend that time with all of you. So, next time on Socks Make People Sexy, a new dawn arises. Bring it on, 2024. Don't miss it.
Oh my god. That is like the list of all time. That is staggering. That is the audio list of all fucking time. Oh my god, Jessica, you're absolutely
exquisite. Jessica's
lists the last couple years have been bangers, and they're even crazier when you consider the fact that she made those on her phone. This one, like, now, like, oh, now she's just completely unleashed because she's got a computer and, like, all the and all of the luxuries that affords one when you want to put together a really good audio presentation.
In true DBZ fashion, the limits have been released.
The limits
this is my full power.
Thank you so much.
I
loved
when you said Sonic because I knew the actual Sonic game was coming next.
That's fucking.
But I looked it up. Yeah, Daytona 2 is playable in Like a Dragon Gaiden.
In Like a Dragon Gaiden, yeah.
But that's like the only way to play it right
that's
now.
That's crazy to me. But again, given that it's Sega, that is also not very crazy to me.
They're like, fine, we'll port it ourselves.
Okay, so yeah. Thank you once again, Jessica. Like, yeah, we put that one last for a reason. That was just really good. Always a
thank
pleasure.
You so much.
Shit, yeah. All right, so before we jump to the main event, I think it's time we go over some honorable mentions. Things that didn't quite make the list.
I got some bangers here today. This year. We got some bangers on the list this year.
Bangers for honorable mentions? Well, we'll go ahead and let you start things off then. So what do you got for honorable mentions?
I cannot believe this didn't make the list. Luminous Avenger IX. I S-plus ranked this game to bits. I loved it.
How the shit? I was waiting for one of these games to make your list. I
honestly think I liked it a little more than Gumball 1, but it's
oh, but John, it
so
had
choice.
The thing you kill at the end.
Exactly, I know. All right, Rance 5D, The Lonely Girl. Cannot believe this one isn't on the list.
What did you just put itch games on your list to impress your new friends that joined our Discord, John? Is that what's going on here? Are you trying to impress people?
See, Polly, I promise.
I'm kidding.
My game of the year lists are always speak from the deepest truth of my heart. I cannot live any other way. I can only live according to my ideals. And you have to believe that according to my number one.
Okay.
Oh, John is dreading his number one for some reason.
All right. Number one. Not number one. A couple more honorable mentions. Hazelnut Hex.
Mm-hmm.
Great shmup. Love this game to bits. The new update sounds very well done.
Oh, yeah. This one. I have this one. Yeah.
No, you can play this. It's Super Crush KO vibes, Polly. You're going to have a great time.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
ASDF2. Just fucking stunning score attack. I love that game. Joey Wimone's normal bedtime routine that is definitely not a recurring Tooth Decay nightmare.
It's one of the funniest comedy platformer, comedy Kaizo games I've played in ages. Mm-hmm. Atomic Runner.
Yes.
Really fucking hard. Oh, but so I got good. The 1cc.
It's so good.
So hard. A Circle of Charity. Beautiful, gut-wrenching, just queer tragedy. Mm-hmm. Mm. Just goes down, like, when you hit that much pain in just 30 minutes, it goes down real smooth. Love and Dehumanization. Cecile already said a lot. Mm-hmm. Love that game to bits. Aria's writing is great. Ultima 3 Exodus. Wizardry, it was a little too much for me. Ultima 3 Exodus was also pretty hardcore, but in a way that I personally vibed with a good bit more. I really liked this one, and I feel like I'm actually equipped to go into Ultima 4 now after trying it like 6 times over the last 15 years. And Queen Beast. I love that game to bits.
Great for a second. I was like looking at Zalaz's list like, okay, so which of these is John's game of the year?
And Queen Beast. All three of Zalaz's entries are on my honorable mentions. I loved all of them. Again, this was a year for me that was just like, it wasn't so much a year of big games like Trails or Planescape Torment last year, or like those
you actually played less RPGs.
Yeah, I actually did play less RPGs.
You finally achieved your goal.
But I played like dozens of fucking bangers, either from retro games or itch games, or like Luminous Avenger, just these absolute bangers that aren't aiming to be like, you know, 30, 40 hour epics, but still hit me really hard. So the honorable mentions I think are more relevant than maybe they are a lot of years, because to me this was a year of where I played like 30 great little games.
Yeah.
Instead of here are the 8 games I really love that are really big, and then a handful of others.
Yeah.
Like, so all of those, please, they deserve a lot of love too. All right. I think we'll hand it next to Rhett. Honorable mentions.
Okay. So I'm the opposite, where I didn't play a ton of games this year. I had like 26 in contention, which means that, hey, like half of them made the list pretty much. So there were 3 games in contention for number 10. I eventually gave to the Flare game. So the other 2 were Yohane in the Parhelion, Blaze in the Deep Blue. I thought it would have also been very funny to put the Love Live game on here.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And like that and Flare were like really vying for that action platformer spot.
Mm-hmm.
And like, this one did make me cry a little bit at the end, which almost won because of that.
Ah, yes.
But like, the stiffness of the combat is just a killer.
It feels so bad.
I don't how, like, I beat
the
game.
Is it different from like Symphony, or is it just that Symphony normal Symphony?
It's got to be more start and stop than that.
Yeah.
Weird.
I don't even know if you can attack in the air. Like,
oh, jeez.
Like, just every attack just feels like it stops you dead.
Yeah, it feels
like it just
really
doesn't have
a
normal flow. It's very strange.
It's got cute animations.
I loved everything except like the fighting part.
Yeah, the fighting part.
Like, the bosses are still pretty good, given that like they're kind of working around your.
They're working around. Like, the few bosses that I did fight playing this game actually felt decently put together.
Yeah. Like, it's just, I'm just not sure why they went with such a stiff feeling combat, given the developers. Like,
I'm still laughing at that clip that Polly posted of like, you really feel the impact of things in this game. And she was showing Yohane about to get crushed by a giant boulder. I expected her to explode into a pile of red giblets. And it's like 6 damage.
2 damage. Like, okay.
Tiny flinch.
Good lord.
I actually never got hit by that, so I didn't know.
I had to know. I just stood there and it's just like, I think that's where like I kind of just felt any excitement I had at like trying to give this game a chance to just fly out. I was like, oh god.
Yeah. And my other honorable mention is Super Mario Brothers Wonder.
Mm, nice.
I think this game's very fun. It's really nice. It's a god. It's more refreshing than New Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
It's funny that. Like, the last New Super Mario Brothers was a Wii U launch game, so it's been, like, roughly 10 years.
Yeah!
And we're still exhausted with New Super Mario Brothers.
We're still exhausting. Yeah.
It took this long, and people still...
New Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah. I think the issue I had with this one was that it focuses so much on having a special gimmick in every level, that I think the normal levels without the gimmick, like, kind of fall by the wayside, where it's just, you're just waiting for that shoe drop moment.
Yeah.
But when it, like, it gets predictable in its gimmicks of unpredictableness.
Like, you know that, like, okay, there's going to be a thing that happens.
Yeah,
in
there's
this
always
level.
Something that happens. Yeah.
There's no just like, oh, here's a straight fucking do some running and jumping wahoo stages.
It's very easy. There's a lot of, you know, it's just not, didn't hit that Celestich of like really pushing me very often. And I think they're so like thorough, I mean, not thorough, but like they're so aggressively introducing and throwing out concepts in every single level that nothing feels fully explored.
That was kind of my issue with Odyssey.
Yeah.
I think this one is even more aggressive about that because it's short little like Mario 3 sized levels.
Well, I asked for it for Christmas, so I'm going to find out.
All right.
This one looked real pretty to me.
It does. It's really, it's really pretty.
Again, I think just overall, I was like, it's funnier to put the Hololive game on there that was made by two people instead of
the Mario game. I think I feel like the Hololive game made by two people probably has a bit more heart in it.
And it gives you a little bit of itch rep.
There you go, and you got some itch rep.
I did actually play it on itch. Actually, you have to download it, though. The browser one like doesn't run at all.
No, the browser one's pretty bad.
So when I finished Super Mario Brothers Wonder, I DM'd John like, that was really good. I feel like this is a solid game of the year list if Mario doesn't make it. If I can find 10 better than Mario, fucking banger
list.
You've
done good. You've done good.
Yeah. So Polly, do you have some mentions?
I got a couple. I didn't play a lot of games this year, so my honorable mentions list is going to be maybe a little shorter than most of the time. But Queen Beast.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to make space for that on my list. I tried, but it was just like...
This wasn't happening. We've all been there.
Yeah, like, it was just, oh, man. And, like, oh, my God, Beast. Just, she's damn good contender for Wifey of the Year, though. Damn. She good. Mm.
Yeah, she was good, actually.
Oh, I really like her a lot.
That game didn't make any of our lists, but it is like kind of Soxcast.
Yeah, that game is Soxcast. Absolutely. Yeah. Queen Beast is Soxcast goated. Like, just go with it. Slap that seal on it. That prestigious Soxcast seal of approval. Put that on your itch page.
I feel like our game choices are so diverse now. All three of us playing something is extremely
rare.
Yeah,
like, it is really wild that we all three ended up... Like I didn't expect you to play it. Like, so I was kind of shocked when you told us you were playing it. So, yeah. So
the 90s aesthetic felt like enough of a give me to, like, okay, I should probably check this
out. Yeah, it's really good. Like, Queen Beast, y'all, it's free. It's gorgeous as fuck. It's funny as hell. A little bit sexy too.
There's titties
in it.
Yeah,
real good Beast titties, man. My God. Whew. She's good. Whew. She's so good. Whew.
I like the main girl.
Yeah.
She's mine. Yep.
Yeah, Switch is real good too.
Switch. I was like, I can't.
Oh no! I was thinking of the pink hair girl.
No, Switch.
Wow, we each have different wives.
Yeah, we've all got wives. Yeah, we got different wives. Everything is real. It's all real good. Yeah. Good stuff. Find Love or Die Trying, which was kind of just like a random, I'm gonna download this just because I think the chick on the front is really hot. And then like I downloaded it and I streamed it completely blind, and it ended up being a delight. Actually, it was just kind of like one of those accidental, oh, I downloaded this on a lark, but it's actually just like, this is really good, holy crap, solid. So it's a visual novel. It's like a dating death game. So yeah, it's really good. It's also free. It's free on Steam as well. I believe they're using the RenPy engine on the Steam version, which is a bit different than the one that I played. But I don't think that there's any major differences between which version you choose to play, whether it be on itch, which is where I got it, or on Steam. I liked Solace State. I think that was a solid, like that's one of those, like, was watching that for about a year, and it's a pretty cool, progressive, protesty kind of queer game, visual novel. A really solid presentation, just one of the more interesting presentations I've seen for a visual novel, where, like, all of the environments are, like, levels that the camera kind of swoops through, and then the character art is kind of laid over that. I don't know that I think that it stuck the ending, but I liked my time with it. I thought it was really good. Just recently I played through Record of Lodoss War, Deedla in Wonderland.
Oh.
Another Team Ladybug game. I don't think that they can really do much wrong. They got a cool new game coming out next year that looks really, really good. So I decided to play a little catch-up, and I had been feeling in the mood for something a little, you know, in that action explorer-y kind of realm.
Yeah.
And this is solid. It's not the greatest one I've ever played. I still think Toho Luna Knights is a better game overall.
Yeah. Luna Knights just has such a good gimmick with the time stuff.
Yeah, with the time stuff. And this is more just kind of like the elemental stuff isn't quite as fun. I don't think the boss design is as good in this game either. And if you're going into it expecting it to actually tie to very much in the actual Record of Lodoss War story, it's kind of just like its own thing. It's really much doing its own thing. It was good. I had a good time with it. You know, I spent like 1.5 evenings kind of just rolling through that, and it was all right. But as far as honorable mentions, that's kind of the best I got. So,
cool.
All right, I guess it's time.
To number one, huh?
Here we are. I do believe as we dive into these final ones, take a moment of reflection and give us your 10 through 2, and then let us know your game of the year.
Number 10, 10 Tales from the Records of the Adamant Gambit. Number 9, Photopia. Number 8, Utawara Rumino, Prelude to the Fallen. Number 7, Victim Doll. Number 6, Butterfly Soup 1 and 2. Number 5, Sylvie Lime. Number 4, Embrick of Wolfhammer's Castle. Number 3, System Shock. Number 2, Sigil.
Okay.
All right. So I feel like all the time I'm coming up with new ways to be bullshit about this.
I'm
sorry.
Getting a bad feeling.
This is a new one.
I'm getting a bad
feeling. This is a new flavor, but
I'm getting a bad feeling.
So no, it's nice. It's a good one.
My tummy's starting to feel weird.
It's a new one. But y'all, across the arc of the Sox cast, one of the arcs was me getting married, and then becoming extremely divorced.
Extremely divorced, like overpoweringly divorced. Nobody's ever been more divorced, other than Elon Musk, probably.
I feel like this represents kind of a culminating character arc moment, because this is such a simp move. But my number one is Daisy Goes to Slime Castle for Tea.
Explain yourself.
I get it.
If you ask me what the most fun I had playing video games was this year, it was playing my girlfriend's game after she moved in with me.
You're telling me it wasn't Umi Neko?
It somehow wasn't Umi Neko.
Somehow wasn't the most fun experience you had all year?
No, it was playing my girlfriend's RPG Maker love letter. It uses assets from basically like 20 different RPG makers, not just like 2000, 2003, MBMs,
and BXAs. We're going back to like Dante 98,
a console port. A major character is from the GBA RTP.
Is there like some RPG Maker 95 in there?
Probably. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. That was my first RPG Maker, is 95.
That fucking kicks ass. That rules. And it's like 3 hours long somehow. It's an epic. It is a 3 hour long comedic RPG Maker game with combat that incorporates a ton of built in RPG Maker assets. And it's another one of those games where like every single thing you interact with has funny flavor text.
You've got to have that.
There's one bit of flavor text that goes on for like 10 minutes. You keep interacting with it. It keeps giving you new text. and it's one of my favorite parts of the game. And like the combat balance, the first time I played it, started off real rough. And we kept like kind of going back and forth and tweak and she'd tweak it. And I'd play it some more. And I'd be like, oh shit. Oh, this feels great. Oh, I fucking love this. And I just got to watch it come together. And I've got, there's like a self-insert main character. And I then like a John insert plays another another part. So I'm just playing this game, and it's like one of my favorite RPG form, video game form factors of like 2 to 3 hour, like comedy RPG maker mm-hmm. game with combat and dungeons and final bosses and bosses. And there's like four there's like a bunch of optional bosses hidden away that are all really cool. And I got to play a game in that form factor. I got to watch it come together that is so funny and delightful and fun to play that is also, in part, a love letter to me personally. And I was just finished it just like the release version. I finished it. I just kind of looked at her like, I don't think I could feel better, warmer feelings for a video game than this. I think this is as good as it gets. And part of that is stuff that's unique to me. I don't expect everybody to have like as personal a relationship with the game as I am, but other people have played it. We finally put out our slime game, our Vextra slime wave earlier this week, mm-hmm. and already other people are playing it and having a really good time and being moved by all the good jokes and the story. Mm-hmm. It's very queer. It actually has like a very nice character story to it that I really liked. And it has Valak, who's just the funniest fucking character I've played in anything this entire year. it feels bullshitty in the sense
it's
that
not it's not bullshit. No, I'm gonna call bullshit on you calling it bullshitty. I don't think you're allowed to call it bullshitty. I think it's perfectly fine. There's nothing bullshitty about this choice. Like, there's no, you shouldn't have done that. No, this is like Homestuck. No, this is nothing like that. This is totally a legit thing. Like, you can tell that this is exact. Like, you're not just doing this to bullshit us here. This is literally how you genuinely feel. This is the best game you played this year. And I absolutely 255% believe mm-hmm. that. So no, this is not a bullshit move.
Thank you for saying so. I'm really it's the most fun I had playing a game this year.
Well, there you go. You can't really argue that.
So that's my number one. Love you bits, Cecile.
Gay. Rat.
Oh God! How do I follow that up?
How do you follow that up?
I don't want to make you say that.
What is your game of the year?
Oh no! I have to read.
You have to read your list from 10 to 2 first.
Okay, now I'm like reverse. I wasn't nervous. Now I am.
You're fine. It's good.
Okay. We're fine. Okay. My number 10 was Flare Nui Nui Quest. My number 9 was Hollow Cure. Number 8, Xenoblade Chronicles 3, Future Redeemed. Number 7, Pizza Tower.
Mm-hmm.
God, that was a while ago. Number 6, Doom Eternal. Number 5, Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, only fucking mention.
Wow!
Maybe it could still be Polly's number 1.
It could be.
Don't think Polly played it. Yeah. Number 4, Fire Emblem, Four Houses. Number 3, Lost Judgment. Uh-huh. Number 2, The Legend of Heroes Trails into Reverie.
And
my game of the year is Void Stranger.
Yeah!
Yep.
Yeah, this tracks. I saw this happening.
Eat shit, Falcom! Void Stranger wins over Falcom!
It took them having a pretty weak one
yeah,
for
they
that.
Yeah, had a
to
pretty
happen.
Weak year, honestly. You know. Things could have gone well for our boy Falcom, but.
I gave Zero Ranger Gotti over
Trails
Third. Yeah.
System Erasure, the Falcom Killer.
Wow. So they said really are erasing things, huh?
Oh my God.
Go for it, Rhett.
So I said something at the start with Flare Quest when I'm like, you know, sometimes it's nice to appreciate the game made by two people. That was foreshadowing.
Oh, look at you.
Void Stranger, as far as I can tell, System Erasure is two people.
It's two people, which is insane. Think, yeah.
This is the game I've wanted to scream about on the podcast since, like, September.
Oh, man. Go ahead, and let it all out, baby.
I don't know where to even start with this game because
I think of 20, based on just how friends are responding, I think of 2023 games, like, we didn't get a lot of mentions on it. It seems like kind of a lock that this is like the best game of 2023.
This actually feels like if there is a game that I have heard more people consistently talk positively about,
there's a Baldur's Gate 3 as
like,
well.
Like Baldur's Gate 3, but I'm talking smaller, kind of like.
This is not a
titles.
Small game. This is the funny thing.
It isn't.
I think it's a more of a niche title than
what you
fucking
mean,
Baldur's
but...
Gate. I think that like the game that I've seen people talk, like Baldur's Gate and Void Stranger are the two games that have been on my timeline since they came out.
I went through an arc with this one.
Oh yeah?
Like, and I mean like after I 100% completed it, went through an arc of like, yeah, that was really good. And then joining a Discord and just reading and absorbing the lore for, like, weeks.
Oh, my God.
Incredible.
Like, I haven't had a game get its hooks in me this long after beating it since, like, Undertale. Obsessing over the story.
It feels really comparable in terms of how it seems to be hitting people.
Yeah.
It's weird, though, because Undertale is a pretty simple story, and, like, everything you need to understand it is in the game. Void Stranger, I saw somebody say, it's like a jigsaw puzzle, and you're given only half the pieces.
Mm.
But what we can make out of that is still pretty interesting. There's a Steam review, it's one of the highly rated ones, that just says something like, this is proof that not every game should be for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds fair,
Because I feel like, as we've seen, there's just not a lot of really big, highly produced, expensive games on anybody's list this year.
No, there's not, really.
Because I think when you aim super mass market, you never speak to people super strongly.
Yeah, and that's always a big thing, like, when we deal with, like, I think everybody's lists, like, the not just ours, but it's just, like, these games are saying things to people, and people are connecting with them on a level that is much more than, I shot a guy, or I'm Spider-Man.
Yeah. I'm Spider-Man! Like, John's number one was basically made for him.
Yes! It was literally made for him!
Like, we're craving these smaller personal experiences.
Yeah.
So, Void Stranger is a puzzle game, and it gets called a Sokoban, like a block-pushing puzzle game, a lot. And it's funny because if you actually watch the trailer, they don't actually do the mechanic of the game in the trailers. If you watch
so
closely,
funny.
They are so... The trailers are so anti-spoiler that they don't even show picking up tiles, which is bizarre because you get that in the first fucking room. Like, that's not a spoiler.
Yeah,
that's
like the
whole game.
Very first thing you do.
Yeah. So they don't even show that. All the cutscenes in the trailers are also fake and not in the game.
That's fantastic. That's fucking brilliant.
Like, there is art extremely similar to them, but, like, the actual ones in the trailers aren't in the game.
That's so funny. I didn't actually know that.
So nothing in the trailer is actually in the game other than, like, the character sprites.
That's choice.
This game, like, so there's three games I have written down that Void Stranger reminded me of. They are The Witness, Baba Is You, and Fez. And those are all games that appeared on my past game of the year lists.
Yep.
Fez was like number two after Dark Souls. Like, it almost won. But it took a strong beast to knock that down a peg. Those are all puzzle games, but they all have the twist moment.
They have the moment where, like cracking the code in Fez, where it's just like, oh my God.
And Void Stranger has the twist, like, two or three times.
That's, I've heard that.
God. And it's just, they put, like, a ridiculous amount of content in it as well. And maybe that's a bad word to use, but, like, this game just keeps going. Like, John got to, like, the end once and got the thing. And that's, like, 6 hours in?
Yeah, I got 5 hours in, and then I saw the wide expanse
of everything of what the game was going to be demanding of me after the fact. I booted this up on a weekend thinking I would just crush it in like a week, thinking like, oh, that's a new System Arena game. Let's go ahead and do that. And then it's like this fucking La Mulata ass epic.
Yeah.
And I wasn't up for it. Everything I've seen about it, I'm just like, this
he
looks
peered into the void and ran away.
Yep. Maybe that's the right decision. You know, again, not every game has to be for everybody.
Everything about it says that this is a story that would move and change people by engaging with it fully.
Yes, yes,
absolutely. I wasn't ready to engage with it on that level.
Yeah,
because like you get the first ending after like 5 or 6 hours. I currently have like 42 hours in the game. It goes.
Oh, at least it's not like 70.
Yeah,
but again, it could take you.
It
that
could
long.
Take you that long because it is a puzzle game.
Because it's a puzzle game and then because it is nonlinear. Like, there's funny things that happen to me, like accidentally warping myself back 100 floors at 1 minute.
Oh, that sounds fun!
Like, again, this game is true to itself and true to its rules.
It has
an ironclad set of rules, and, like, Polly grated against one of them
immediately
with the lives counter.
Yeah, God damn it. And I know that it's the game fucking playing a trick on me. Like, I know the game's just fucking with me. And, like, the thing is, this is a game I desperately want to get. I want to. I want to sit down and just, like, have the patience, have, like, trust the game, like, let it do what it's gonna do, trust myself to be smart enough, and then just let it do what it needs to do. I want to do that badly. Like, I seriously do want to play this game really badly.
It's just that I don't think this game maybe is necessarily for you because even like through the weird stuff, through the meta stuff, you also just do a fucking shitload of
Sokoban puzzles. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you can't escape that aspect of it.
There's not a moment where that stuff suddenly, oh, surprise. It's not a Sokoban game.
It doesn't disappear.
Like that. Yeah. Like,
in fact, that part does start to get in the way when it becomes more of an overall scope of things and you're going through the same levels over and over
to explore
the labyrinth. And obviously there are ways around it, like warping yourself back 100 floors. Oops. Oh, 100 floors. Oh, I did it backwards. Let's try it the other way. There's just so much of this game. The soundtrack, I forget what it says on Bandcamp.
So
it's like,
it's so
30
good.
Tracks. 30 tracks shown, 100 tracks hidden.
Yeah.
Because spoilers.
Yeah.
Like when I was reading Discords and forums about this game, it looks like redacted CIA documents because the amount of black text that gets censored because people don't want to talk about what actually happens in this game.
Yeah.
It's just very funny. Oh, the Discord I'm on, I think, not official or anything, but I think the devs have hung out there because it's like the biggest System Erasure Discord.
Mm-hmm.
There is General Void Strangers. Spoilers, Void Strangers, super spoiler channel.
Oh God,
a super ultra mega spoiler channel. There's four, and then there's After Everything. There are 5 Void Stranger Discord channels dedicated to how far into the game you are.
Christ,
and I know exactly what each of them means. And John, you're still on the first one.
Yeah, I figured. The big thing that seems to, from the outside, the big thing that makes a difference between this and then the other games you listed, The Witness, Baba Is You, Fez, it seems to me like there is a strong kind of character story at the heart and the beating heart of this game that is not there in those other games.
That's what I was going to get to that. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. I mean,
no, it's fine. That's a good segue. That's the thing is like, this game is juggling so many plates because there is also a lot of narrative to it.
Mm-hmm.
Which can be get a little weird when things are nonlinear, but in general, it's designed in such a way that you'll probably see it in the intended order, and you may be like me and accidentally skip one cutscene that was very important in hindsight.
Oh my God!
I skipped one, thinking, "Oh, that's probably going to be one of the cute fluff ones. It's probably fine." And then I find out after getting the true ending, oh, it was like the lore backstory cutscene.
Oh,
fuck. Of all the ones to accidentally miss.
Of course. Yep. Of course.
The cutscenes I saw,
they're so good.
It's unbelievable how strong the voice of the narrative bits in this game are.
Like, it's so efficient in just these brief little dream sequences of mm-hmm. giving you enough characterization and reason to care about these characters.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, early on, I was almost like, I'd almost rather be playing this cute little 16-bit, or not 8-bit, Game Boys bit
mm-hmm.
JRPG than the puzzle game stuff, but
yeah.
mm-hmm. it all balances out in the end. Yeah, so the fact that this game has insane soundtrack, really good story, insane puzzles on the small level, just screen per screen, and on the wider game wide level, it's just really, really
it's
awesome.
It's kind of nuts. I remember seeing a couple people responding like, oh, it's like these anime melodrama cutscenes, and I'm like, wait, you mean like, I just played it and was like, oh, this is just good, this is such a good story.
Right.
So it's just so plugged into like JRPG language and whatnot. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, this is how you tell a good story.
This is just
though.
How you tell stories.
Yes.
Yeah. I love like the JRPG boss battle parody right at the start.
Yes. Oh my, that was when I was immediately like, oh, this is something special.
There's just cute little moments like that all over. And then the true ending. So like the one thing about the narrative also is that there's a bunch of endings and they don't necessarily like they kind of conflict with each other in that if this happens, then this can't happen.
Right.
Like even time is nonlinear.
Mm-hmm.
So like there's one ending that you'll probably get second or third. That's like the big emotional narrative ending. And then there's one that's like, that you'll probably get last. That's like the big lore ending. Mm. And that one goes real big on spectacle, but I think like it wasn't the big emotional make you cry moment as well. Like that's kind of the one knock I have. There was one thing that I was like, and I'm talking so vaguely now because spoilers.
Yeah,
there was one thing in the true ending that made me go, I don't know about that. But then when I kind of got an explanation, like, it was always true. It was always like that. Like, it simultaneously made the ending stronger for me and then opened up another, like, but what about X, like, plot hole?
Oh, my God.
It's so wild.
What a fucking game.
Because I can kind of see what I think was the original design, and then there's also a dev ending where they just straight up say, oh, by the way, and at this point in development, we added this character, and that, like, doubled the scope of the game. Because my wife said to.
Of course.
The wife demanded more cutscenes, yep. and that
so
blew
good.
Up the scope of the thing.
God, it's so good.
Yeah, so the fact that it's an extremely strong puzzle game and extremely strong story, like, and the soundtrack goes ridiculous. Like, the soundtrack's really good.
Yeah. Like, the first ending of sorts.
Yeah, that one's really good, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the true ending stuff, like, the soundtrack pacing is so funny. Because there's like 20 tracks right at the end. Like it just goes for like an hour.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it was like hypest moment of the year for me for sure.
Cool.
And then there's like hidden secrets. Even in the game of like hidden secret
even
stuff,
in the game,
there's
like there's secrets upon secrets. There's secrets
yeah, there's just stuff
secrets.
You don't have. There's just a bunch of stuff you don't ever have to do.
Exhibit pops up. Yo, we heard you like secrets, so we put secrets in your secrets.
That's basically it. Like, oh, if you go here, do this thing, then backtrack 20 floors, and then do this other thing, a secret room opens up. That's the stinky hole. You don't want to find out what's down there.
Oof, nobody wants to find out what's in the stinky hole.
Okay. Before I will wrap it up by saying one thing, mm-hmm. one last thing, and this is kind of a spoiler, but it's to tease you guys.
Okay.
If I had a nickel for every time there was a block pushing puzzle game with a, like seven hot demon girls based on the Sins, I would have two nickels.
Two nickels,
not
baby.
A lot. But it's weird that it happened twice.
I just remember the sexy snake girl. I forgot about that. I didn't know about that.
That's not in there yet.
God.
Good stuff.
I know, they advertise with boobs real early.
I mean, why like, not, man? Know your strengths.
There's
thank you, Rhett.
And believe me, There's lore reasons for the boobs.
I love lore boobs. Lore appropriate boobs are my favorite boobs.
Oh, well, doesn't she in that one of those first scenes like call her titty monster or something in the first fake boss battle?
Mm. Oh, the princess says,
yeah. God, I love. Oh,
yeah.
Someday I'll be strong enough.
Someday. I know. This is the one where I'm just like, he's never going to get to this, is he?
Someday.
Oh, okay. I said that was going to be the last thing, but this is also funny. I saw a video. I haven't actually gotten around to watching it yet, but it's like Zero Ranger 1cc all, complete playthrough, and it's like an hour and a half long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Somebody did a video called All of Void Stranger. And it's like literally everything. And I looked at it and they're speeding through the puzzles super quickly. So it's a lot of it is kind of run cutscenes and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's 11 hours long.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Cool.
So that's why you get people now who played Void Stranger playing Zero Ranger and being like, oh, that's it.
Oh, that's it.
It doesn't have.
I saw a friend go, oh, that's all. That's Zero Ranger.
Yeah, that's what I kind of
expected more.
Oh, there's not like 10 layers after this? Oh, okay.
Oh my god, I wanted to.
That's pretty blase.
I wanted to burn Void Stranger in acid, but vindictively. But it's fine. Void Stranger seems great.
Seems fine.
It's just a nice.
Sorry, you can play all of Zero Ranger in like 5 hours and then have a great time. I guess it's wrong for games to be economical.
There you go.
Time.
That's the thing is like they made the one for you, like the banger 5 hour shmup. Mm-hmm.
The banger 5 hour shmup.
And then they made the one for me, the 50 hour puzzle game.
For all I didn't realize I have a lot more puzzle pervert friends than shmup pervert friends. Mm. It's fine.
Next year in like 2 years they'll make the 100 hour visual novel for Polly.
Yeah, I'm ready. My time to shine, me and System Erasure.
It's so funny. Yeah. Like the dev room is like, we use this graphical style because this was supposed to be a smaller, quick game. Funny how that works out.
Yep.
Hey, good on them for like finishing Zero Ranger. It took them like 10 years, and then they turn around this one in like 4 years.
Yep.
Like that's still really impressive.
I don't think this was supposed to be that long.
No,
though.
This was supposed to be like a 1 or 2 year project.
Crazy going back to like 2020 and seeing like the dev stuff that just looks exactly like the final game.
Yep.
It's just that the scope got out of hand.
The scope got way bigger.
Okay.
All right. Well,
Holly.
All right, my turn to knock it out of the park. All right. So I'll give you the countdown, and then we'll jump into the game of the year. My number 10 was Phantasy Star Universe. My number 9 My number 9 is Honkai Star Rail. Number 8, The Looker. Number 7, Detention. Number 6, Signalis. Number 5, Trails to Azure. Number 4, Sayano Uta. Number 3, 2236 AD. Number 2, Butterfly Soup 1 and 2. And my game of the year, I don't really think, is much of a surprise to anyone that's talked to me at all since I played it earlier this year. Ladies and gentlemen, my game of the year is Xenoblade Chronicles 3.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
I knew this miles away.
This one was kind of just a dead game. So, to kind of explain this game a bit and why it stuck with me, I kind of have to dig into the pity party that was 2023 for me. I literally started playing this game 2 or so days before my best friend suddenly passed away. And I was playing this game when someone knocked on my door to give me that news. I remember my characters were standing in that world. And the reason this all kind of ties to that is that Xenoblade Chronicles 3's story deals a lot with the concept of death and understanding mortality, accepting mortality, and what not moving on from an intense loss can do to a person. And as you can imagine, those were very relevant themes for me this year. So in a way, my connection to this game is very much like my connection to Persona 3's The Answer, where I played that after my mom passed away, and that game subsequently ended up meaning something more to me than maybe most. Though I imagine this choice isn't quite as controversial as me liking Persona 3 The Answer, I suppose. It's not all doom and gloom, though. There's definitely, like, I think this is obviously maybe, like, the gloomiest we've actually seen Xenoblade. I don't know that the other two games really kind of go as kind of heavy on their theming as this one does. There's still a lot of room for lots of, like, awesome anime coolness to happen. There's a lot of genuinely great, fun writing between the characters, like, this cast of characters, just they're my babies and I love them and I'm going to hug them and protect them, hold them in my bosom and tell them that everything will be all right even if the world's ending. Monolith is still the best in the business when it comes to cutscenes. There's a
yes.
And if you don't believe that, go check, you know, like, hey, any number of action scenes in this game will do it, and then there's a big old 2 hour schlong of cutscenes in the middle of the game that'll be like, oh, okay, no, these guys kind of got it figured out, don't they?
Yeah, it's not even the action stuff. It's that they just also just made a drama movie in the middle of this one.
Yeah, they just drop a 2 hour drama movie right in the middle of this game, and the voice directors and the voice actors on both sides, Japanese and English, they kill these scenes so hard that it's just like some of the most emotionally gripping storytelling I've seen in a video game. That moment in this game is just so incredibly strong, and it leaves, like, everybody I know that's played this game, even the people that don't like this game, have been like, oh yeah, but like that part right there, that 2 hour section where all of that's happening, holy shit. I think that, like, for me anyway, I think that this is like the most human any Xenoblade cast has ever felt. For me, like, Xenoblade casts, they're kind of hit or miss when I think about them. Like, when I think about the characters that I like, and, like, I think about, you know, like, Xenoblade 1, it's like, who do I like? And it's like, well, like, I don't like everybody. And with Xenoblade 2, I really don't like everybody. This is the first time where I generally love everyone in our party. I feel like they all get really good growth. They have a lot of good stories that fit all the central themes of the narrative, and it's so fun watching them all come to, like, to, you know, go from being like at each other's throats to coming to, like, really care for one another while helping each other, like, dig through their own personal shit that they've never really had to stop and think about before. Like, why am I like this? Oh shit, there's some messed up stuff, huh? You got your main characters are awesome. Like, the heroes that you recruit have a lot of great stories. Like, most of the side quests are just really super good and fleshed out in those ways that, like, I was stopping and, like, trying to find any and all the side quests I could in this game because I think most of them are just generally really well written and done. Shania, who deserves all the love in the entire world. Monolith's writers, they just hit something with this game that I have not felt from this series before. And like Iffy said, I think that as you play this game, I think that you can sense, like, a really palpable anger at the state of the world. Like, the writers of this game are very angry, and I feel that, like, of any Monolith game, this is maybe, like, the most pointed I've ever seen their writers be in, like, their views in the entire state of the world and the way they comment on that and show as many sides to it as they can. And I think the brilliant thing is, like, it never gets lost in that anger. Like, I think that, like, when you write a story that's that angry and pissed off at the world, it's easy to kind of, like, start losing some nuance for things. But I think that, like, they managed to, like, express that anger very loudly and very pointedly while at the same time, like, holding that pen very steady while trying to, like, still be able to tell a very warm and touching, captivating, exciting story that still gives you all those big bumps that you want from, like, a big anime, you know, RPG game. And it all comes together. Like, I think that this is probably the best Monolith Soft game, honestly. Like, I don't... Like, I love Xenosaga, but I absolutely think that they have found another level to their writing and their voice with the Xenoblade Chronicles 3 that I really hope they maintain going forward, because I think that, and I don't agree with Iffy, like, the way that they are writing right now, it's better than what Falcom's doing. I think that they absolutely outwrote Falcom in one game. And I'm not trying to be disparaging toward Falcom at all. I just think that like the aims are different, right? Like they're obviously not trying to do the same thing, despite the fact that there's some similarities in how they're approaching it. I just think that this game, like, this game feels as human to me as when I started playing Trails and getting into the deeper parts of that series, like with Third. Like, this to me is comparable to a lot of the things in Third, where, I don't know, I just feel like it's grounded in a lot of ways that I didn't feel that Xenoblade Chronicles 1 or 2 were. And I think that that really just makes this cast of characters really unique and interesting. And, you know, you grow to love them as they grow to love one another. And it's just a really, really well done story. Even the moments where it's just like, yeah, like, okay, you're right. The balance of the game, it's not perfect. It's easy for that game to become stupidly easy if you out-level everything. The consoles could have been baked a little more, like those, you know, little, they're kind of monster of the week kind of things and all of that, but I think that, like, none of that actually kind of takes away what I loved most about Xenoblade Chronicles 3, and it's that I just think that this is the strongest narrative I've seen in a video game in a long time. Especially one of this caliber coming from this kind of money, this kind of company, you know, like, I feel that they're writing a story here that I don't know that they would have dared to have done maybe when they started out working with Nintendo. And I feel like this is kind of where Nintendo kind of just gave them the money bag and came back 2 years later and had a good video game waiting on them.
Amazing. Yeah, the highs are just so high in this game.
They soar. It's so much. This game just kept fucking laying me out every time, man. Some major story event would happen, or character reveal, or just a side quest that hit just right. It's all just very, very well done. Just an amazing video game, top to bottom.
Fucking awesome. I'm so glad this played out so well.
Yeah.
I knew going in, like, seeing the trailers for this game when it was first revealed, it's like, oh, they're going dark. They're talking to Polly now. Now they want the Polly vote.
It's so funny how Xenoblade 2 veered way more bright in anime.
Yeah.
And then this one, oh, we're going dark this time. This
the
dark third chapter.
Yeah, it really is the darker third chapter. But there's still a lot of levity in this game. There's still a lot of likable... Like, come on, Senna's an absolute delight. Like, just brightens up a scene every time she's there. Mio is an amazing... Yuni is hilarious. I want to be called a Muppet. Xenoblade Chronicles 3 is the shit. Love that game to pieces. Cannot wait to play Future Redeemed. Gonna be
on my list. On my list last year, I had some nitpicks with this game, but then I said, also, I do consider it better than Fata Morgana. But I was seeing it as Polly's game of the year. I'm like, yeah, I was right. It's pretty fucking good still.
It's been You did it, Red. Proud of you. You waited it out. You waited it out a year, and you did it. So, yeah, I guess that puts a cap on another year.
Fantastic.
I guess we did it. And so I guess that winds us down for yet another year. The fact that we've gotten to do 10 of these now is honestly kind of incredible. Like, years later, I'm still amazed that people put up with our dumb asses to any sort of degree. And I find myself similarly shocked that despite there not being a regular podcast right now, that there was still so much excitement around this show this year and so much participation. I've said it before, and I guess I'll say it again. Like, everybody in this community is amazing, and that you care enough to listen to what any of us have to say at all, I think it kind of just means the world, really. Similarly to my co-hosts, John and Rhett, I don't know how y'all put up with my bullshit nonsense on and off the air, but you do. And that alone has probably earned you both sainthood, but, you know, you also have my eternal thanks as well.
Lots of love, Polly.
All right, so before we fin to bounce right on out of here, John Thayer, why don't you tell the internet folks at home where they can find you?
You can find me at farawaytimes.itch.io. I've put out 3 different games this year. We put out the Vextro Slime Wave, which is Engorged, is part of that. You can click a link and play 4 other great games, maybe 5 by the time this is out. So, yeah, I'm still keeping on. I'm just doing my thing. I'm really glad to have a lot of cool spaces online where I can do that with cool people.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you just kind of it is increasingly needed. I think as we dig further and further into this planet's slow, painful death. Rhett, why don't you add some sunshine to our life? Where can the internet folks at home find you?
It's been so long since we did one of these. Right. I forgot about the plugs at the end.
Yeah, I know. I almost forgot myself.
My website is still inconsequentialexistence.com. All my games are back up.
Yeah,
it's
baby!
It's been long enough that we did one of these that I actually updated.
Play all of Rhett's games. They're all very good.
I need to put the game trailer I did up there.
Yeah. And me, you can find me at socksmakepeoplesexy.itch.io. I released a few games this year. Key among them is Synchronize. You can play version 2.0 of that right now.
It's real good.
ASDF2 is, I think, the most polished little action-y kind of game.
Real good.
Made. Numlock, hey, do you like bubble wrap?
Best game feel 2023.
Best game feel of 2023. Absolutely. Absolutely. I also released a meme game, Rika Furude Simulator 2024, as well as Fard. All amazing video games. Hopefully
anybody beat that Rika game yet?
Huh? Nobody's beaten the Rika game yet. Some people got 5 sixes, but could not land the sixth.
Did they really?
Yeah, I saw somebody. They posted a screenshot of 5 sixes. Not enough. Not enough. Enjoy your tragic fate. And you can catch me at twitch.tv/polyplushie for any time I'm doing streaming shenanigans. So I guess that's another year in the books. Don't know what the future holds for the podcast and all that, but you can always stay tuned at the site, and that's where you can find out what we're doing. You could, of course,
join the Discord.
And join the Discord. You can join the Discord. There's a link on the site down at the bottom. You could join the... There's an invite there. You can do that. Join the Discord. Talk to us. We promise we don't bite. We're actually mostly kind of nice. So, yeah. That's going to do it for another year. Thanks so much for everything. Thanks so much for hanging out. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much to my co-host for just being here and going through this with me. And we will catch you next time. And remember, of course, that we are the podcast that loves you. We are the only ones that love you.